Yeah, Film Vault.
All right.
Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. That's Anderson.
Hey.
I'm Brian Bishop. We are your hosts for today. Top five boat movies.
Are you like, is your SOS machine down and you're trying to yell to the steamship across the river? You're screaming.
Trying to make contact.
What's happening?
I feel like, I don't want to get into it, but some of the characters in my movies.
They scream.
I'm trying to make contact.
Mm-hmm.
Muffled. I'm very muffled. I'm very muffled.
That's just you. That's the kid. That's the treatment.
I don't want to compete with the singer of this song.
You don't want to compete, period.
I don't want to compete with anything or anyone, ever.
You want a world of Brian.
I want a world of even. I'm slightly ahead of everyone. Not much.
That's what you want, and that's what you fantasize about as you walk about. Hey, guys.
Stop it.
It's been a while. Thanks very much for picking up the slack and dealing.
Yeah.
Never in the history of the show have either one of us said, hey, can't do the show tonight, last minute like that.
We should point out that it's been a week, remember, since there's a Christmas episode in between now and then.
Oh, there is?
No. Yeah.
Really? Oh, I guess you're right.
It might even be 2 weeks, depending on our recording schedule this week.
All right, then never mind all that.
No, but you're not going to talk about it on the Christmas episode, are you?
I guess I'll just bring everyone's Christmas down and talk about it there. No. As we record this here, the week before Christmas is the first time that we've done this in a couple weeks. And it was because, as most people know by now, I've talked about it on other shows and whatnot. But I was dealing with someone very close to me, hit a very rough patch, and they needed a lot of help and couldn't get it on their own. And mm-hmm. I found myself kind of just everything in my life, including my wife and my son, had to go on hold. And it was kind of last minute. And it's just one of those things where you got to leap into action. And next thing I know, when I came up for air, it was started Wednesday and it came up. I came up for air on Monday night, late Monday night. So it was an ongoing thing. And I hope that I did as much as I could do, and you know, time will tell. But it's not anything that everyone, many other people have had to deal with, and it's just.
Did people on the listeners of the show reach out to you and let them know you're there thinking of you?
Yeah, I got a lot of that, and a lot of that saying Brian said to do this. so I'm assuming
I normally wouldn't do this,
going to upset you. But yeah, I got a lot of very nice well wishes from a number of listeners, and that was nice. But yeah, no one's dead. You know, just somebody really close to me was kind of edging towards that way, and it was quite apparent to everyone. And I was the only one who was actually in a position to be able to do anything. So
there you
did.
Go.
I tried to.
Responsibility.
But everything else is good. Jillian's good.
Kid's good.
The
Jillian's
wife's good.
Yeah.
The kid's good. Everything's good.
Is he grown? Is he plump? Is he big boy?
He's a big boy. Let's talk about movies.
Yeah, let's talk about some films.
Films.
It's been a while.
Dude, really? I want this to come out like sooner than later. Why don't we do the Christmas episode like after Christmas? Who cares?
I mean, it's kind of nice when the Christmas episode comes
because,
out.
Because, you know, we're with Flick Fashion. Like, I'm talking about movies that are in the know that happened now, and I went out to see them to make sure that we could talk about them before they're old fucking news.
What do you think, Logan?
I don't care.
It'd make it easier on you.
It's fine.
It'll probably be easier for you, too, right?
Sure.
Hey, happy Friday, everybody. Christmas right around the corner,
Film
huh?
Vault family New Year's.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, who cares,
who
right?
Who cares?
The show's a service, and it's an information service. And, you know, I think that it's more important to have a show about movies be more relevant with the movies, that, especially this time of year, rather than like Christmas time. Do a Christmas show. We'll have that coming out next Friday, the Friday after Christmas.
That's fine. I don't think it's dependent.
People will still be on vacation.
People, like 4 days after Christmas. Oh, what is this Christmas nonsense? Right. I'm over it.
Speaking of which, let's talk about the election coming up.
Sure. Yeah. Let's do it. 2020.
No,
we're past it.
What are we going to say there, Logs? You got something to say there, bud?
I was going to say, I still play the gift exchange game on like New Year's Eve with some friends.
See, so it's ongoing thing. All right, I'm going to start off because I got four films.
Four.
We're
making up for lost time.
Making up for lost time, and I've been seeing a lot of stuff, one of which I did not see the film I was assigned.
Oh, I didn't remember I assigned you.
And I don't care.
Oh.
Don't care.
What did I assign you?
You assigned me Bleed for this, which is all well and good, and I'd like to see it. I love Miles Teller, and I like biopics, and I'm going to watch it. Here's the thing. Mm. By the time I had a moment to actually go see this, it was no longer in theaters.
Yeah,
as of right now. So it's pretty much the worst possible time that anyone could talk about this movie is when it's in purgatory in between theaters and streaming or DVD.
That's fair.
So I will catch up with that when I owe you one, taking a mullet.
I understand. Okay? It's a personal issue that made you derelict in your duties.
I was planning on seeing it that Wednesday on the way to the studio, and then everything got turned upside down.
Exactly.
But, you know, even then I was thinking about maybe shirking my responsibility there, because I'm like, this movie's not going to be in theaters next week, not even at the Dollar Theater. Why am I wasting my time and everyone else's time, which is what I'm doing right now.
You owe us.
Instead, I saw another movie which might also be in purgatory, but it's been a couple of weeks now. Edge of 17.
Okay.
This movie does not work. It's very weird.
I've heard good things.
This movie is starring Haley
Joel
Steinfeld. Steinfeld, who you might know from probably most of our people know her from True Grit. Most of our listeners.
Anderson, one of the more shocking admissions. No, not admissions. Takes, hot movie takes on the, you're familiar, there's a popular podcast called The Adam Carolla Show.
No.
And the host, Mr. Carolla, shared his opinion that he thought True Grit, the remake, was a better movie than Hell or High
Water. A lot of people think. Hell or High Water.
I was shocked.
It's hard when you're talking about a remake, and you know, True Grit was the celebration of that time, that era.
It's a good movie, but let's not confuse it with greatness.
But you know, everything's subjective, and you know, to each his own. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's a wrong opinion.
I'm talking.
Anyway,
when I want yours, I'll give it to you.
Edge of 17.
Okay, and it's also starring one Blake Jenner, who you might know from Everybody Wants Some. He was very, very good in that, as well as Kira Sedgwick. And Woody Harrelson. It's the story of a 17-year-old girl who's having some trouble. She's down in the dumps, based on a book, which is kind of obvious. And I believe it's based on a book.
Would you call it confusing? And
no, it's not based on a book. It's based on. It's just written by the director, Kelly Freeman Craig. She's confused. She's got teen angst, and you know we've seen these movies before. One real gold, big gold star that I give Edge of 17 is this is a movie that easily could have been made as PG-13, and if studios were involved, I can't imagine this movie not being made with a PG-13 rating, which means that all these teenagers that are going through these really life altering, awkward times in their lives involving sex and relationships and. You know, the threat of becoming a human, an adult soon.
Right.
All of this, I mean, we've all experienced it, except for those of you who are listening who are going through this right now. You don't go around going, oh, shucks, darn it, I really, unless you're like,
oh,
you know,
heck.
Unless you're a Mormon. So it's like, thank God this movie was R-rated so they could speak the way the kids speak. Because if you think about it, teenagers, when they make these goddamn PG-13 fucking movies, right, Brian? Mm-hmm. I'm using the fuck a little bit more because soapbox.
Yeah.
They make them about kids, for kids, but they don't speak like the kids. And who cusses more than any other faction? Yeah. Any other group?
On the play yard.
On the planet.
You know what I'm saying? The kids on the play yard.
I know.
More than up there with sailors. And that's it.
They sail more than truck drivers and sailors.
Baseball managers.
I think 10 years old, or you know, depending on where you are or who you are, to about 20, 25, that's where you really get all your fucks and shits in, right?
Who amongst us has to walk past a playground and go, oh, you're a fucking kid, get out of here.
One of the reasons.
Get out of my sandbox, give me a goddamn baller, I'm going home.
Well, I don't like a lot of these PG-13 teen movies is because they're just unrealistic. As soon as I hear a teenage kid using language that they wouldn't usually normally use, I'm taken out and it just feels plastic. And, you know, safe and
unauthentic.
Nothing unauthentic, just for a money grab. So this was very authentic in the language. A little too authentic. Watching her speak about sex was off and weird. It was almost like I think actually it was kind of meant to be an ode to 16 Candles. Okay. John Hughes' 16 Candles, which was fantastic, which makes me feel like an asshole now because that was PG-13. Mm. Different time.
Yeah, but still, I was going to say, you couldn't do that. You couldn't do it back then.
But I got to tell you, the stuff with Woody Harrelson, who is her teacher and pretty much her only confidant, the only person that she allows herself to talk to, that stuff was great. Like, if this was a short movie or if the entire movie was about their relationship, it was fantastic. All the other stuff, I didn't really dig, didn't really love. You know, it's not made for me. It was made for teenagers, I guess. But it's just an odd movie. I also noticed a couple of the production companies at the top. You know where you see like Warner Brothers. Yeah. It was like I can't remember now. It's been a few weeks, but they're both Asian, like a Chinese company or maybe a Korean company was behind this one.
I got news for you to interrupt. 16 Candles, I had a hunch, is rated PG.
Even though PG-13.
There are bare breasts in 16 Candles.
That's true. I think this was before PG-13.
The first PG movie was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Mm. Mm. I think Red Dawn.
Oh, yeah. It was right around. There's always some controversy.
Red Dawn. All right. So, anyways, it's a decent movie. Like, it's all about her going through the motions, you know, not dating the guy that she should be dating because there's a cute Asian kid in her class, but she doesn't. He's too safe, so she's going after the bad boy. And there's some very real moments in this movie, and it feels like an updated 16 Candles.
Overall, did it work?
Overall, the wife liked it. I can see a lot of other people liking it. It just wasn't made for me. I want to, you know what? You know those movies where it's like, when there's two characters on screen together, it's like on fire and it's great. Mm-hmm. And then those two characters separate and they got to go on with, you know, the other A story, the B story in this, or the subplot of her spilling her guts to her history teacher, who was played by Woody Harrelson. That was by far and away the best part of the movie. And, you know, it was sprinkled throughout, but that made me feel like the rest of the movie was not as good. So I didn't want to spend that much time on it. And sorry I did. Let's move on.
I'll be quick about this. I saw
The Edge of 17.
I saw a bad movie.
Be quick.
I'll be quick. You see Money Monster?
No, I've heard that it's not as bad as you think, though.
It is worse than I thought. I watched it hoping it was going to be. I will say this about Money Monster. Good trailer. A trailer got me interested. It looked like a taut, tense thriller.
Looks like a phone booth type movie.
Yes, it does. Directed by Jodie Foster. This came out in May of 2016. George Clooney, Julia Roberts, Jack O'Connell are the principal players. The main character, played by George Clooney, he's sort of a Kramer. John Kramer? What's his name? Jim Kramer. Jim Kramer, you know, the guy
who hits the sound effects.
Hits the sound effects, which is something only dullards do.
It's what you do now, so I get it. I get the joke.
Many years.
When I was a dullard.
He is the main character, and he is painfully uninteresting. He is charisma-free, which is amazing. That is quite the accomplishment for George Clooney, or for the person directing George Clooney, because he is a charismatic guy. He jumps off the screen with everything he does. Just George Clooney being George Clooney is a charismatic fellow.
You seen Tomorrowland?
I actually didn't mind Tomorrowland.
Get out of my house.
It wasn't great. Wasn't bad. A third of the way through this movie, I wrote down, I don't know a thing about any of these characters, nor do I care. They're not particularly compelling. I'm dying. There's a British guy trying an American accent that's wildly out of place.
All right, well, that's kind of like one of your things.
That's right. But his girlfriend is British, so why in the movie would he bother?
Maybe he wanted to try and exercise that muscle.
The plot has forced twists and turns that only like an imbecile could not see coming. Mm. They're not surprising at all. There's a showdown scene that is painfully staged and amateurish at the end. It sort of brings these two guys together in a fantastical sequence that we're supposed to believe. 58% of Rotten Tomatoes. I cannot imagine anyone genuinely enjoying this. I would be shocked to hear from any of our listeners who said, oh, I really liked Money Monster. It was quite good. I cannot envision a scenario where someone really enjoyed it.
All right, so that's a no for you.
There was one good scene, though.
Yes, tell me.
I'll describe it to you because you're not going to see this movie unless I assign it to you.
Yeah, why would you do that? I'm really actually, you know what? I got to tell you, my innards tingled a little bit when I heard you say that you did not like this.
Really?
Because I'm like, oh, great, I can avoid now. Because if you're like, you know what? Not bad.
Not bad.
And then you would sniff, and then I would be watching.
You could do worse. There's one, so you're familiar with the plot where George Clooney is this barker, the carnival barker of a financial expert, and he gets taken hostage. The studio gets taken over by a guy with a bomb strapped to him, right?
Right.
And he goes in, he's got the gun, he's got the bomb.
I know the premise, yes.
And he blames George Clooney essentially for giving a bad stock tip. And he put everything, he's like, he said it was can't miss. And I put everything in the stock and then it went kaput. And now, you know, now I'm pissed and you're all going to die. And Clooney is still alive on the air. And so Clooney at one point, you know, the thing goes on for a couple hours and the people are watching. Of course, it's, you know, it's a mass media event now. Everyone's watching this thing live and unfold live on the air.
Right.
And Clooney's like, I tell you what, you still got the stock? He's like, yeah, it's worth nothing now. He's like, I tell you what, my listeners are going to come through. And he's like, I tell you what, listeners, I want you all.
Viewers.
Viewers. Thank you. I'm so in the mode of podcasting. I tell you what, viewers, everyone watching me right now, everyone listening, everyone watching, go to your broker, go to your E-Trade, go to your whatever, go to your computers, buy all the stock you can.
Isn't that illegal?
Drive the price up. No, he's just making a recommendation. Right. Like, he's like, drive the price up. We're going to get this guy's money back. And he's like, that's the only way that I live. You're buying this stock, driving the price up, saves my life. You're saving me. You're helping this guy.
Start a GoFundMe right there.
And he's trying to get the stock up, because this live stock ticker is right behind him, right?
Convenient.
And he's doing this very impassioned speech. And he's like, come on, you're saving my life. You're doing this for me, and we're doing it for this guy over here.
Start going down.
It looks up, there's a pause, goes down.
Yeah, that's good.
It was a good scene.
That's good stuff.
One good scene. Good job, Jodie Foster. Fortunately, it's surrounded by about 40 bad scenes on either side. So Money Monster, do not see.
I saw a film called Moana. Let's move on to Moana. Switching gears. Disney
Isn't
Moana.
This like 99%.
Moana. Disney's been killing it this year. Started off with a little movie called Zootopia, which will definitely be talked about in the year. And Vaulty's episode that we do in March.
They did Jungle Book.
They did Jungle Book. They've been killing it. Mm. And Moana's their latest, starring one Dwayne Johnson as Maui. He's like a mythical creature god, if you will, who has a fishing hook, a giant hook. That's like his
weapon of choice.
It's not even a weapon. It's what gives him his powers to be able to be a shapeshifter, right? Don't ask me to say the lead character's name.
Say
is Moana.
Say the character's name, please.
Aluii.
This is
Cravalho.
Was the actress or is that the
Cravalho? She plays Moana. She plays the title character Moana. This movie is sold as a Dwayne Johnson film vehicle. He doesn't really show up in the movie until I'd say the end of the beginning of the second act, maybe.
Deadbeat dad.
The story is this. It's a little girl, once again, and I'm almost kind of starting to roll my eyes now with the overcorrection where almost every other movie is about a little girl being a hero. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I get it. They're heroes a lot.
Sure, girls are great, whatever.
Stop it. But it's just like this one, the guys was so thin that she was going to be put in power on this small Hawaiian island mm-hmm. because her dad was the chief. But they didn't really do anything to establish that her dad was the chief. Her dad just seemed like a frumpy, regular, like just another Hawaiian dude on the island. They didn't really show any kind of majesty. Right? Mm-hmm. That was a problem that I had with it. And it just seemed like that was a lazy plot device to make it so that she was all-powerful sure. or important on the island. Right. I saw it as just like Disney's like trying once again, well, much like the last two Star Wars are doing, just we got to have... I just see the fucking jowl white men in their chomping on their cigars in the boardroom saying, with young girls at the center, it's really selling. We got to increase our market share. We have to get a woman in there. It's not coming from an organic place.
I gotcha.
So anyways, she...
So your imaginary notion of how this movie is
probably exactly how it works.
Yeah. was affecting how you viewed it.
So she's a risk taker. She wants to go beyond the reef. Oh, no one goes beyond the reef, says her dad. And no one's allowed to go beyond the reef. So they're kind of like stuck on their little island. They can only go like, you know, wade in the water. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that the ocean chooses her. The ocean is a living, breathing thing. Sure. And it actually manipulates itself and kind of points at her.
Like
and
the
like
abyss.
The sea parts, and she goes out and she finds the heart of her island that had been missing, but only Maui can put it back into the heart of the island to save her people. It was almost a little bit hard and convoluted to follow. I didn't really care. It looked pretty. It looked good.
How was it for kids? If it's hard for you.
Because there's a lot of song and dance. This is a throwback. Okay. They break into dance and song and music more often than they don't. And,
song of the South Pacific.
I'm not a big fan of that. Once again, these movies aren't made for me, but they can be. And I do dig a good musical if it's catchy. And I got to say, right smack dab in the middle of this movie is a fantastic number that I will always enjoy. And if this movie's ever on and if it hasn't gotten to the center scene, which involves one Jermaine Clement playing a big shiny crab, he plays Tamatoa. Oh, he's got a catchy song and it's a really, really good number. So that's the best. Have you seen this yet, Logan? Have you seen anything about Jermaine from Collide of the Conchords?
I want to see this movie, so I've been avoiding a lot of information about it.
That's why you're really shying away right now. Not a bad movie. It's just you'd expect more. You expect more nowadays. We're spoiled with, like I said, the Zootopias, all the Pixar movies. And this, Brave is another story about a young girl, you know, defeating all odds and doing her thing. This one just felt clumsy and it felt like we got a wedge girl in there. Could have just as easily been a boy. Not that I'm getting hung up on that. It's just all in all, it was cute. It was good. Kids probably liked it. They were laughing in the theater that I was in.
95% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of...
I'm researching for the gambling.
It's kind of... Oh, no.
Oh, this could be the episode where it all ends.
It's Moana. It's not... It doesn't deserve the 95% or, like, you know, we talk about this all the time. That just means 95% of critics like it. If it was on a scale of 1 to 10 and these critics had to give it a score, I think it would probably come in at, like, a 7. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's funny you mentioned that because Metacritic... has it at 7.9. That's the average critic score.
All right, so I guess a little bit higher than...
You're about right.
But Moana, I didn't feel... I could have missed this one.
Really?
Yeah.
It'll be up for Best Animated Picture, though.
Dwayne Johnson was good.
You'll have to see it.
Dwayne Johnson, he was good. He usually bothers me. But, you know, they're pandering once again. Like, guess what he does? He doesn't ask what The Rock's cooking because he's not allowed to. Does his one eyebrow go up? Oh, it does. He's a cartoon playing a different character. Stop it with his trademark eye move. Let him be his own thing.
There's an ultimate badass out there. His name is Dwayne, and he's the biggest movie star in the world. And he's an ass kicker.
What are you talking about?
His name is Dwayne. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Dwayne is just not an ass kicker's name.
All right. I don't understand that tangent. Please tell me your next movie.
All right. Next movie. I saw a film. It's a popular film. It's called Rogue One. Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Come on, let's talk about it. It's one of your four films, right?
No, it's not. What? I already covered this one like 2 weeks ago.
When?
I'm cool guy.
On Star Wars? On hey, Film Vault?
On Cinema Dicks. We covered Star Wars 2. Oh, plenty of people. Actually, you know what? Interesting fact.
Let's hear about
Interesting
it.
Fact. All the people that gave for groupers, two groupers, and you know, I've been going back and forth and corresponding and emailing people and getting addresses because I'm, you know, I'm starting to get the perks. And it's a full-time job, Brian, let me tell you. No. But you know, I'm doing a lot of back and forth. And it's odd. You want to guess it, especially by the numbers of the shows that I do. But for every three, hey, I listen to Cinema Dicks and I love it, I get one for the Film Vault that After Disaster. Yeah. It's weird. Cinema Dicks is taking the lead. But not as far as numbers go. Tell you that much.
That's clearly statistically representative.
But what I'm saying is the Cinema Dick listeners, they really listen.
Mm-hmm. So Rogue One, A Star Wars Story was discussed on
probably
the other podcast that you said would never interfere with this one. And when you wanted
it to hasn't. No, I saw it. It does not interfere because I saw Star Wars on the Disney lot for Cinema Dicks. Okay. I did not see it for this show.
Oh, well, then
so stop it.
Then don't talk about it here.
I won't.
Rogue One, A Star Wars Story is directed by Gareth Edwards, and directed Godzilla, which I did not like. I don't know. People liked Godzilla, I think. I don't like it. Felicity Jones, Oscar winner for The Theory of Everything, is a star. Diego Luna, your pal Diego Luna. Ben Mendelsohn, who I love to see in more movies. Mads Mikkelsen, who has the best name.
Are we really doing this? You're telling our listeners who's in the new Star
Wars. Donnie Yen, Forrest Whitaker. And the voice of Alan Tudyk as K2SO.
He's a scene stealer.
I know. I really like that K2SO.
But you know what?
There's only so many directions you can go with droids.
Yeah. What would behoove the Star Wars universe programmers to program a sarcastic droid? What would the benefit be there?
Yeah, what do the rebels get out of a snarky droid?
What is that?
Well, currently there's a population problem in Japan, so companion robots are really big over there.
Right.
This is a galaxy far, far away, though.
Currently, if we're trying to make robots more personable and more lifelike, mm-hmm. I can imagine, this is a galaxy far, far away in the past, but in the future, if we were looking at science fiction, robots would be almost like humans.
They're going to have some human, but, okay.
They moved past the AI thing a long time ago, obviously.
Yes. Alan Tudyk, good guy.
Lots to unpack about this movie.
Tucker and Dale.
Steve the Pirate from Dodgeball. You all know Alan Tudyk. He was King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph.
Right.
I'm King Candy.
He's also in Moana.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. He's getting around. Okay, let's talk about First of all, Rogue One, did you like?
It was okay. I was talking to Logan before this show began, and what I was doing, and I talked about this on Cinema Dicks, I'm watching it. It's so hard to look at this film objectively because of all of the memories we have of it as kids, like we all do. And I was trying to imagine that this was just a sci-fi movie. It wasn't related to anything that I knew about before. Would I like it in that case if it lived in its own universe and I'd never seen AT-ATs before?
It does kind of live in its own universe.
Absolutely
though.
Does not.
Well, I mean, when I say, of course, it's a Star Wars story, but this has the least.
These characters aren't going to be seen again unless they figure out a way to get some more money out of these people.
Right.
Maybe they could do another story before this.
A super prequel. But this
Star Wars characters in heaven.
Well, they are kind of in heaven. They see like Force characters show up, little glowing things around them. But Anderson, this has the least to do with Star Wars of any of these movies. Like, there's no lightsaber battles. There's no Jedis. There's no lightsaber battles. Huh. As I said before, you interrupted me. Defaulted no.
Okay, you can get, you know, talk about semantics all you want. This is, you see all the same characters. You see Darth Vader. You see numerous characters that you're familiar with. You see all the same uniforms. They're all going after, they're talking about the fucking...
Right. But it's a self-contained story. I mean, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
It doesn't have an end.
You don't think so?
No.
Why would you say that?
I kind of agree with Anderson that there's no end.
The end is the first Star Wars one, but they don't bother to do it.
That's so
if you watch this movie in a vacuum, it doesn't have an end.
Interesting. I guess we're looking at two sides of the same coin. I looked at it as this story was sort of set up and paid off, all self-contained. Of course, there is stuff that goes on afterwards in the expanded universe, but the story is self-contained.
Are you kind of a little disturbed that, you know, our childhood is just being hijacked? I mean, from the get-go, from the very beginning, this is a Disney movie. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Lucas anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with
him. It's actually probably a good thing.
What's the first thing? It's absolutely a good thing. I don't know if Disney's the best thing, but what's the very first thing we see?
Very first thing we see
on
is
the screen.
Lucasfilm, right?
Lucas Limited, yes.
Yeah, Lucasfilm Limited.
So
yeah.
From the very beginning, they're lying to us. The very beginning.
I'm sure produced or whatever, but we know. Okay,
name alone.
Speaking of the very beginning, did it bother you, and probably didn't, in any way that they didn't have a crawl? You know what I mean, the scroll or the fanfare. Yes. You know, did that? It bumped me a bit.
Did you have anybody in your theater start clapping when that first note of that accent that they play in place of the crawl happens?
No.
I heard one or two people in the theater just start clapping instinctually, "Oh, I'm going to clap at the crawl!"
Thank God.
And then they stop themselves immediately because
no, we got a lot of screaming and hooting and guffawing with the Lucas Limited, and I was thinking it should be Tinkerbell going over the Cinderella's castle. Little castle there. Stop getting taken. I like Felicity Jones.
I like Felicity Jones a lot too.
I like her teeth. They're big.
I liked Ben Mendelsohn. The thing I liked about Ben Mendelsohn, it indicates to me.
Ben Mendelsohn. So Ben Mendelsohn.
He's the best Mendelsohn he gets.
Yeah.
I thought this was a really well written movie. And one of the things that I liked best was Ben Mendelsohn's character, because he's a corporate middleman. He's on the corporate ladder, stuck in the middle. He's middle management. He has aspirations to get up, but he's blocked from
A lot of these characters, all in the Star Wars universe, right? No.
Yeah. It's always about the Emperor or the Supreme Ruler or the Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker or the Princess. It's always about It's always about some grand, it is very melodramatic Star Wars normally, but it works because it's so grand. I am your father, and we're fighting for the control of the universe.
You just gave away a very huge plot.
I am your father, and you're my son, and we're fighting for the control of the universe and the galaxy and this and that. And there wasn't any of that. It was a very small story about very specific people who had very specific, complicated relationships. The main villain wasn't the ruler, the evil supreme galactic
Great,
ruler.
So read the book.
What?
Read the book then.
What? Oh, this shouldn't be a movie?
Well, if you're so into the story,
I thought it was a very creative, clever.
What I'm saying, Brian,
to expand the universe.
And I'm sorry, we still got a lot, and we're making up for last time. We're essentially doing two episodes here, let's not make this a 2-hour one. I'll try and be quick with the picks when we get to the picks. But every time you see anything on the Emperor's side, on the Imperial side, the evil side, there's always that greed and power, lust for power. And it's almost every single character that you see over there that has any kind of personality, it's always a power struggle. And they're based on Nazis.
Yeah.
And all about greed and power and climbing. Brian, you know about climbers.
I know.
So I don't know if that's to give it a bunch of credit, because this guy's complex because he wants to, be a ruler. And
plus, they did that in The Force Awakens with Kylo Ren, because he wasn't a great villain. He was kind of bad at his job in the beginning of the movie, and by the end, I think by the next movie he'll be better.
I know.
But he's constantly
whining
with that
and
other
brooding,
guy.
And everyone bitches about him being whining and brooding. When's the last time you saw Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back? Luke is one of the whiniest bitches ever.
Right.
There's all sorts of whiny bitches in this universe.
I'm simply pointing out, and I think you can appreciate it as someone who writes movies or writing a movie for yourself. It's a clever twist on a very tired trope of this is about the most evil man in the galaxy, or this is about the blah, blah. No, it's about guy who's who's stuck in the middle trying to get ahead, and he's kind of evil, but he's also kind of ambitious. He's a bad dude.
Was it about him? I mean, he showed up a few times.
He was the main villain.
He was, I guess so.
Anderson.
Yeah, he was a main villain. You know he's the main villain? Because it became down to mano a mano with him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's a good writing.
And I also kind of liked at the end, I'll just say generally, the thing that the good guys had to accomplish was very tactile.
It was very small scale.
Yeah, it was this little thing is the linchpin to the whole rebellion.
Which you can either think is ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's the whole movie centers around them getting blueprints.
Yeah.
But there's giant action going on around it. And you know where it really lost me, Brian? Mm. You know, and I'm assuming a lot of people have seen it by now. And this isn't giving so much away, but it's we got to the force field is killing us. Mm. It's that power switch over there. Mm. And there's just a fucking power switch right in the middle. And it's just a switch. It was just absolutely ridiculous.
People are picking apart the third act because that's where it really kind of falls apart.
The movie started strong.
And I talked about this on Cinema Dicks, but I was fantasizing as I'm watching it, who I would like to see direct these things. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking it's Star Wars, right? Yeah. War. Who is the greatest war director we have right now? And I think I got to say
Steven
it's probably
Spielberg.
Mel Gibson. Imagine Mel Gibson making Star Wars.
Wow.
Imagine him just having, and then once you start going down that road, or Darren Aronofsky, or having even Spielberg. Once you start
Doug
thinking
Liman.
About that, you realize, oh, wait, it doesn't matter who's directing this because they're just a figurehead, kind of like the president of the United States. Disney's really the one pulling all the strings. How many fucking people did Gareth have to answer to, you know what I mean? How many are on set? And it's such a giant behemoth that there's really never going to be any kind of like stank on it of anyone.
You're right. There's no signature, but there can't be.
The signature is in itself the characters and the uniforms that we're familiar with. So please.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was exciting.
Okay, good.
I mean, it's worth your, you know, $10-$12.
You have to see it. I mean, everyone's going to see it. It's hard to. There's a lot of people who don't see movies at all. They just see like Star Wars and like Michael Bay Fox movies, you know, and it's a whole different animal than what we do here, I think.
We should probably touch on the digital effects because the Peter Cushing thing is it's a hot topic amongst the nerds.
Fill me in. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Did you not catch that one of the characters is entirely digital?
Which one?
Oh my. Did you really not?
I don't know.
Because actually, that's very interesting because I went to see with Christy.
A lot of them were all digital. Fucking Peter Tudyk was all digital.
Oh, yeah. The Droid. That's a good point.
There's fucking digital all over the screen. Right. It's hard
Alan
to tell.
Alan Tudyk was a completely digital character.
Peter Tudyk. Alan Tudyk.
Christy and I went to see it together, and I was immediately like, oh, I hear the voice of Grand Moff Tarkin, voiced by Peter Cushing, who died in 1994. I'm like, I wonder if they got a whatever. Come to find out, it's a digital recreation. They had an actor do the part, but they digitally put his face, Peter Cushing's face, on him after the fact. And I remember looking, I'm like, oh, he's kind of weird looking, but it's actually really well done. And I didn't say anything to Christy, but I said afterwards, after the movie's over, I said, Christy, there was a character in that movie who was totally digital. Could you tell who it was? She's like, no. I mean, aside from, you know, the robots or whatever. I'm like, no. It was like, it was a human, but it was totally CGI.
What are we doing here?
It was a really well done job of, I didn't know if you noticed.
Was it Paul Walker?
The old man, Peter Cushing, the old guy, the old villain guy with the sunken cheeks, totally digital. And you couldn't tell.
Yeah, you know what?
It was really convincing.
I was thinking, like, that dude looks just like the other one. That was some good casting right there.
I just thought he looked weird. I thought he was weird and old.
Is it as impressive? And I'm being a naysayer.
It is super impressive. They fooled a guy who hosts two film podcasts.
That's fairly, well, no, dude, there's so much shit going on, you know, it's not like I'm looking for like, oh, he might be digital. I just thought, yeah, it was good. But at the same time, like.
You can't even give it up.
A couple years ago, we had Looper.
You can't even give
it up. We had Looper where we get to see Bruce Willis, young Bruce Willis and what's his name? Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like morph into the same person for an entire film.
Oh, they kind of messed with his nose, but
no, dude, they digitally made him look like Bruce Willis, and that's super impressive. So the fact that this bit guy came in a couple times, really, nerds are sitting around talking about it.
It's very on brand for you to not even be able to give it up for groundbreaking special effects.
I think groundbreaking was Looper, which was what, 2013?
You don't have to convince me. I love Looper.
Here we go 3 years later, and you have mountains of money. They have money that could probably go up over the Matterhorn. And I'm supposed to be excited because they made some old man look real? Mm. I don't give a fuck.
All right.
You know the first time they ever did that?
What was that?
Mission Tomorrow? No. Oh, never mind. I can't remember, but it had Matt LeBlanc.
Oh, yeah, someone died.
Matt LeBlanc
right?
was in it.
The character I'd be fed.
No. Like they were missing something. They couldn't get him back in. Yeah, and it was like all CGI. It was based on TV. Martian? What? It's based on TV.
Mission to Mars?
No, Mission to Mars. What was it? Matt LeBlanc.
What was the Danger Will Robinson movie?
That's what I'm talking about. What's it called? Mission to Mars is a really bad Brian De Palma.
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space was the first time I ever saw an all digital character. If I recall, using this kind of orb that he was right, and like I learned after I saw the movie that he was all digital, so I went and saw it again, and I'm like, holy shit, he looks awful now. Now I'm looking, I'm glad I didn't know.
Yeah. So anyway,
I have two other movies, but I'm not gonna.
Do you want to do one more? Do you want two more?
All right, I have to do this one.
Which one?
Last night, I saw a little film called Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, yeah, for good things.
Familiar with Manchester by the Sea. You have any other movies, Brian?
I have none. I got five films to talk about in my top five.
Green Room was my other movie. It is streaming now. I've watched it a second time. I actually had the wife watch
it again?
I don't think I flick-fested here. I covered it on Simdix.
We talked about it because you assigned it to me.
Okay. Well, it's streaming. It's streaming again, and if you already talked about it, I wasn't sure if you had even seen it. So that's streaming again.
You assigned it to me. It's really good.
And it's
good little genre flick.
Amazon, stop saying good little genre.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's not a little genre.
You're dismissive. It's a good little genre flick. Next, Green Room is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to put this pen up your urethra.
It's no, you Rogue One.
Manchester by the Sea. It is directed by Kenneth Lonergan. He has made three films.
I know, Ken.
Two of which I've seen. I have not seen Margaret, and I feel like an idiot now. Like, I got to see it because what this guy's doing is so fucking impressive. It's so impressive. He is also known for writing a lot of stuff such as Analyze This and Gangs in New York. More importantly, he wrote and directed his directorial debut was You Can Count on Me, which was a great movie. I don't know if you saw it.
I did not. Really
like heartfelt. Okay, I give a lot of shit to Chris Nolan, and you know, he's so, and you know, with Lucas, like some of these guys, like they're really good on one side of the coin, but they're no good with like human emotions and stuff. And Christopher Nolan, after watching Interstellar, it's like obviously this man doesn't have human emotion. He doesn't understand what love is, and he's trying to figure it out. So, great.
How great would a Christopher Nolan Star Wars movie be, though?
It would never work, though, you see.
Why?
Because Mickey would come knocking on his door and on his trailer and saying, hey, I had some thoughts.
Hey, Christopher.
And, you know, it's just, it can't.
Hello?
Disney's claws are in it, and I understand there's no other way around it. So it's never going to be anything other than a ride.
Did you ever see Analyze This?
Yeah, I saw the first one. I didn't see Analyze That.
You may have to.
Any which way but loose. Any which way you can. All right, back to Manchester by the Sea. What do you know about this movie?
I know it's starring Casey Affleck. It is directed by Kenneth Lonergan, and it is getting a ton. It was nominated for Golden Globe. Yeah, Best Picture.
It'll be up for Best Picture Academy Awards as well.
I also hear it's very sad.
But do you know like the storyline or anything?
No, not at all.
You see, I actively avoid trailers.
Me too. I haven't seen much about this one.
My wife knew more about it. Somebody actually brought it. I think my mom brought it up when we were dealing with a bunch of stuff. And Jill, and I'm like, she's like, what's it about? I'm like, and I'm like, you know what? I don't even know. I know who's in it. I know who directed it. I actively avoid storyline, but it doesn't really matter. And Jillian knew what it was. So she actually piped up. And ever since then, she's been going, I know way more about movies than you do. And it's kind of hurtful. But here's what I can tell you.
The long-lost Gretchen Mol's in this.
It's kind of like a... it's almost, I don't want to say a red herring, but it's a plot device to get things in motion, but it's really not what's at the heart of the story. So the story is this, and it's quite simple, and this is how it was pitched to Kenneth Lonergan back in the day. It was supposed to be a vehicle for Matt Damon to star and direct in, and Kenneth Lonergan was always attached to write. Kenneth Lonergan, he's a playwright as well, and you got to imagine he's done a lot of like stage stuff, and he directs there's so many choices in this movie that works so well where, all right, let me just give you the basis of the story.
Yeah, set it up.
Casey Affleck is the younger brother. They're Bostonian. You know, they talk with the accent. It's like they like apples, right?
Sure.
And the
New England thing.
They're always, well, every time they're watching TV, it's always sports, and they're always watching the Bruins or the
Sox
or the Celtics. And he's got a brother with a heart condition. Played by, you know him if you watched Bloodline.
Kyle Chandler?
Yes. How do you know him?
I'm looking at the Wikipedia.
Very good.
Oh, that's, how do I know him? He's a Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably best.
That's how you would know. Because I know him mainly from Bloodline. He's the oldest brother in there. Also with Ben Mendelsohn.
He was the federal agent in Wolf of Wall Street.
It's true. He was. Yeah, he's recognizable.
And the drunken dad in the way, way back, right?
All right. I don't even remember.
Miles Teller's drunken dad.
The movie did not do it for me. So Casey Affleck's older brother, he's got a heart condition, and he goes early, right? And Casey Affleck has to go, and he is the backup plan. He's supposed to watch his. He's got a teenage son. His older brother does, and he's like the godfather essentially. But Casey Affleck is a. He lives in Boston. He doesn't live up in this town called Manchester by the Sea, which is a real town that was just called Manchester. And then there was some kind of controversy back in the day. This has nothing to do with the movie, but they changed the name to Manchester by the Sea. So Casey Affleck goes up there, and he's a janitor, a menial laborer. And, you know, he lives a very simple life. And we don't really know much about Casey Affleck, his character, other than he's got a big brother who just passed away. And now Casey Affleck has to take care of his son. That's the setup, even though it takes almost a full act to get there. But that's how they're selling the movie, that people know not much about the movie. Jillian knew about it, that... So there's a backstory to Casey Affleck that you don't know. And I think I was just using, we need to talk about Kevin a couple weeks ago about how the exposition is just so well doled out piece by piece through editing. This movie has to be up for best editing. It's really? One of the best edited films I've seen. There's montages in here that I've never really seen before, because it's like, well, he's just having a conversation with a lawyer about his brother's will. And then it's intercut with flashbacks of what got Casey to this point in his life, where his other life, it's really, really, really well done. Really? There's moments where Casey has to break the news to immediate family members about his brother. And rather than, you know, making it a big moment, what you'd expect in almost any other movie and almost any other director, would, you know, they'd make it a moment and be all about crying and, you know, the actual dialogue. We don't even fucking hear a thing. We just see them. We just see them talking, and the camera is just sitting
through a window or something.
It's a style that it was actually that scene was on the ice on a hockey rink, and the camera doesn't follow the characters over. It's just they let it play out, and you can see the reactions, and they're not over the top. It makes you feel like you're privy, and you're in this town, and you're kind of just like an observer wandering around watching a lot of this stuff go on. And it's daring, and it's ballsy, and it really, really is effective. Ironically and strangely enough, the one scene that just like they almost needed a reshoot was how they're selling the movie. It's the billboards and the posters for it, and I think it's the actual poster of the movie where it's what's her name?
Michelle Williams.
Michelle Williams, yes. Thank you. Michelle Williams talking with Casey Affleck. And I really like her. And she's great.
Yeah.
She did not do it for me at all in this scene. It was supposed to be a very emotionally charged scene. It's how they're selling the movie with the picture on the two of them talking. And it's a very important scene. And it just felt like acting. And it's rare that I'm watching a movie thinking, like, that seems like acting. It was weird. And that's how they're selling the movie. It'd be a very strange world if she's up for like best supporting actress. Right. She was great in the rest of it, but
sometimes a shallow field though.
Her money scene just it did not. And how often do you hear me like nitpick someone's acting?
Very rarely.
Not really my.
It's not your thing.
No, I usually buy most people's acting and I give it to them because it's a character thing. But
is this up for best picture in your opinion?
This will definitely be up for best picture.
Okay.
Yes, this is it's a really good movie, and it's one of these films where like a lot, the end is a little bit. Soft, but it's not the kind of movie you just put a bow on, or obviously it's not going to be a happy bow, but it's like things just continue, and it's not a clean break. That's what's one problem that I might have with it. But much like I hate them more because it's one of the worst, it's just a hard movie. There's no joy there.
It's
this movie
one person dying.
It's just unbearable at times. Some of the subjects that it tries to tackle, it is so sad.
2 hours and 17 minutes.
2 hours and 17 minutes, but it goes by. This is one of the best dramas I've seen in a long time.
Really?
It's really, really uncomfortable, awful, tragic shit that actually could possibly happen to any one of us. And these things fucking happen, and they need to be explored. They need to be looked at. But it's done with humanity and like joy. And what I started to say, like everything that Christopher Nolan doesn't understand about humans, Kenneth Lonergan obviously does. I mean, this is a guy who understands human nature and human spirit. Mm. And there's a lot of shit to laugh at in this movie. There's a lot of comedy.
How's Casey Affleck? Is he now ahead of Ben in the rankings? How's he doing in the rankings? The Affleck rankings.
I mean, momentarily, he's going to be up for best actor and Casey and Ben's not, you know, I don't see a world where Casey Affleck's not a nominee for best actor.
Wow.
Really, really, really good. I really enjoyed this one. I wish that it had a little, I guess the story could have been a little tighter, but at the same time, it works. It's one of these movies where you don't want to spend that much time in that space, that mental space, but if you have to, this is the way to do it. If that makes sense.
Coming up next.
You know what I mean?
It does make sense. So how urgently should people get out and see this in the theater? Is it one that can wait for like, so until Oscar season to start or, you know, rent it or whatever?
Well,
or is it get out and see it now?
What are you like worried about? They're going to find out too much about it. I mean, what's the, you know,
what I'm saying
is make sure you see it.
What I'm saying is prioritize. There's a lot of good movies out right now. A lot of movies getting good reviews, I should say. Is this one you got to rush out and see? Or is this one like, see it for the Oscars?
As far as what's in the theaters right now. It's probably the best, one of the best movies in theaters right now. I haven't seen Lion though. So, but yeah, I've seen most of everything that's out there right now. And that's, this is one of the more powerful movies, and just if you really like movies and you listen to the show week in, week out, and you like different styles and whatnot, and you think, you know, as you're watching the movie, you think about choices that are made. The choices that Kenneth Lonergan made in this were fucking daring, but they worked. Like, it's just, how did he come up with that? Why would he think that that's a good idea to not actually, you know, make that a big moment? But it works. It works.
Coming up next, top 5 boat movies. Open your lavender to stop and step the hall. The hallways are silent. Anderson, more people buying stuff we recommended on the Film Vault top 5 gifts for the film lover episode.
Mm-hmm.
People clicked through and bought 2 Back to the Future flux capacitor USB car chargers.
Smart.
The Wilson Castaway volleyball, as well as the Moon River soy candle you recommended for the ladies.
Or
the men who love good scents.
Or I'm glad because you gave me a lot of shit when I had that on my top 5 list. Yes, you did. And I'm like, this is a good gift for your lady in your life, because they'll make you think that you care and like you know the movies they like.
Well, thanks for looking through
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Everyone on our banner. Other things purchased.
Yes.
On the AndersonandBrian.com Amazon banner include, someone got the Baby Relax Michaela Swiving Glider Recliner. I mentioned that because we also have a Baby Relax Swivel Gliding Recliner. The one that we have in our nursery is it's the Rylan, but the Michaela is very good. You'll enjoy it. It's a swivel glider.
All right, dude. What are you, like an aficionado of gliders now?
It glides and reclines.
All right. So does ours. Move it.
A Britax USA Marathon convertible car seat was purchased, as well as an Apple smartwatch, Dell Latitude 14-inch notebook PC, an Apple 8-inch iPad Mini 2, Bose SoundSport wireless headphones were purchased. Thanks to everyone, by the way, a number of people, and we appreciate it, who got the Amazon gift cards, a lot of holiday ones for loved ones or a strange gift for someone you hate, I suppose. But thanks for getting the Amazon gift cards through our click-through banner on AndersonandBrian.com. Thanks to the person who got the women's mountain hiking boots, size 6. What is this here? A Fitbit Blaze smart fitness watch. A Le Creuset cast iron balti dish. You know what a balti dish, Anderson, is?
No.
A balti dish?
No.
It's kind of like, it's for making like curries. It's an Indian dish, but it's like kind of a bowl, but you cook on it. It's cast iron.
It sounds like a wok.
It's very similar to wok, mm-hmm. like mixed with like a mocajete, like a thing you grind like...
So you can smash it.
Yeah, and you make curry in it.
Right.
What else is here?
Make paste.
The
nobody sucks paste in this town like I do.
Someone spent $1,600 on a Roland electronic drum kit. So thank you very much for getting the Roland electronic drum kit set bundle with kick pedal, throne, headphones, and sticks through us. That's awesome. A Tuft and Needle mattress, queen size, a Samsung 40-inch 720 60 hertz LED TV. We appreciate that. As well as, oh, Anderson, you ever play roller hockey? You're a hockey guy. You ever play roller hockey?
I can barely stand on skates. Right?
Oh, really? Yeah. So you watch with empty.
Yeah. But I do have a design on teaching myself to skate so I can get the kid into hockey because I don't want to just be standing on the sidelines.
You can get the kid into viewing hockey. That's not too hard.
No, I want him to play.
Okay. Thanks to the person who got Bauer Senior Vapor roller hockey skates. Black, size 6. We appreciate everyone clicking through this holiday season. And moving forward, if you have gift cards to spend, please consider clicking through our banner at AndersonandBrian.com. It's free.
Here are the movies that were clicked through. This is the last time I saw you. You know what?
You have a long list, buddy.
Yeah, it's long. Here we go. Fred Claus. I shouldn't have even said that one. Hunt for the Wilder People. A really good movie. But, you know, this year is tough because there's so many movies that I liked a lot, so few that I loved. You know what I mean? Hunt for the Wilder People is just right there on the precipice. Don't love it.
It's a really good movie.
So good, though. Yeah. So good. Yeah. Pan's Labyrinth. That's a movie I fucking love. That's top 5 if it came out this year. 24-hour Big Brooklyn, Cool Hand Luke, Dick, Everybody Wants Some, Evil Dead, Goodfellas, Hachi Dog's Tale, Heathers, Hell or High Water, Henry Porter, The Serial Killer, the sounds in that movie alone, Mad Max, Fury Road, Neighbor Side, Resurrect Dead, The Mystery of Toynbee Tiles, Seven Samurai, Star Wars, Suicide, Thank You for Smoking, no, fuck you for smoking.
That's a good movie.
No, it was not, it was the beginning of the end.
Play the music again.
With what's his fuck, making movies,
Reitman?
Yes.
No.
Awful.
You like Up in the Air?
No, it has a really good end. Working Girl, The Secret Life of Pets, which is a letdown. The Prestige, The Jungle Book, The Hobbit, The Crying Game, Why Does He Have a Dick? Talented Mr. Ripley, Straw Dogs, Star Wars, Force Awakens, Some Like It Hot, Shakespeare in Love, 7, Quiz Show, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, I saw that. Pride and Prejudice, Marvel's, I don't know, I'm not gonna say. Jack Reacher, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. You seen that, Brad?
No.
Deck it out. Heat, Green Room, Full Monty, 5 Easy Pieces, Face Off,
5 Easy
Don't
Pieces,
Think Twice,
tough watch, tough
Creed,
watch.
Chinatown, Bicycle Thieves, and Alice in Wonderland, as well as all the Toy Stories. Hey, guys, thanks so much for clicking through.
Yes, means a lot to us. And now back to the show. Hello, my fellow Americans. President Barack Obama here, and you're listening to my favorite podcast, nay, the only podcast I listen to, The Film Vault with Anderson and Brian.com. Yeah, welcome back. Top 5 butt movies. Anderson,
Splash.
We might have... I'm putting crossover at 1. I can see one being on your list, but I think there's enough butt movies out there that we're not going to have too much crossover.
You know, I was going back and forth trying to figure out if it was scenes or actual movies, mm-hmm. and I probably should have checked in with you, but
you had stuff going on.
And then at one point I had, you know, four boat movies with one solid boat scene. It's actually a boat movie, but I don't really care for it. I was really proud of myself for finally having a Wes Anderson film on my list. That wasn't Bottle Rocket, but that one scene, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Great fucking scene.
Is it the, we'll talk about it.
Where
we'll
they show the whole
yeah,
boat.
The cross section.
The cross section.
That's pretty great. It's the only thing I remember in that terrible movie.
Don't say it's terrible. It just wasn't for you or I, right? It's a lot of listeners love the Wes Anderson. They enjoy him.
It's a good point.
But for the rest
movies.
Of the movie, I just, it didn't tickle me the way it was meant to tickle. You know what I mean?
Was that on your list, the scene?
Or if we're just doing boat scenes.
Okay.
That
save
and
it.
One flew over the coup. Oh, okay. All right.
Save it.
But that said way too much. All right, but now we're just down to movies. That, you know, it's got to be boat through and
that's
through.
That's right. These Much are movies easier. That center around a boat or boats, I suppose.
Suppose.
Did you make a differentiation between boats and ships?
One movie is more of a ship than a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And my number one could be seen as either or, I guess.
For the purposes of this list, they're interchangeable for me. But okay. I understand there is a difference.
I mean, if you're on a cruise ship, I think people will say, get back to the boat, and then they won't be, we're right. on an excursion, we got to get back to the boat. I don't think anyone's going to be confused by that.
This was inspired, by the way, because I was on a boat. Remember when we decided on the list, the top five boat movies, I'm on a boat.
No.
So, cruise. You know about this?
No, I don't know anything. What's going on?
I don't want to know about it. Do you want to be a plus one next time we do a Corolla
Look,
cruise?
We're running late.
Corolla cruise.
Let's move.
Corolla cruise. You want to be a plus one?
No, I'm good, bud.
You'll be a mascot.
It's like being
a Disney character.
Being a mascot.
It's like being a Disney character. Like every time you
I
walk around.
I don't want to be a Disney
people
character.
People stop you and tell you.
Oh, God, your dick must have been hard the entire trip.
I wore sort of a jockstrap type. It was a chastity belt kind
this
of thing.
This is just like your hog heaven. This is just awful. Look at you. Look at your smug smile. Like this is your, like this. This is your make-a-wish.
You know,
this could be your make-a-wish. Like if you had to make, let's say you were a kid and you were like on the precipice of death. Right?
This is my bat kid situation.
You would say, I would like to go on a cruise ship where everyone knows me and stops me to talk to me and fawn over me. I'm getting cringes right now. They're like real. They're 100% real.
Can I tell you something? It was sort of an open bar situation. It'd be about the drink package. And let's just say the juice is flowing.
Number five for me.
Juice everywhere.
Get out. Number five for me. Oh, you're such a horrible person. You really are gross. You're a gross, gross person. You're disgusting, some might say. I would say. I'm saying.
You're pretty much saying it. I don't know why you're dancing around.
Do you understand how horrible that would be for me? Do you understand how awkward and awful that would be for me?
Yeah, people telling you they enjoy your work, that's awful.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Once is enough, and I'm like, thanks. So what do you say? You can just sit there and glow like, yeah, tell me more. What is your favorite drop? Oh, get out! I saw a film.
Boat movies.
This is what inspired it? I don't want to do this fucking list.
I've soured you on the list?
Yes. You've sullied it.
Well, it inspired you because I'm on a boat. I'm like, oh, boat movies. It's such a bread and butter topic.
All right,
like,
my favorite thing ever on a boat is there's Lonely Islands. I'm on a boat.
Yeah.
The video.
It's good stuff.
You seen a movie called Triangle?
I have not.
Triangle, Brian.
What is Triangle? I don't think I know what Triangle is.
2009, Brian.
But the Bermuda Triangle?
Movie directed by Christopher Smith. It is a sci-fi film because Triangle, as you have already alluded to, is about the Bermuda Triangle. And it's some friends. They find themselves on a yachting
George.
Trip.
I got to watch this.
Settle down. They find themselves on a yachting trip in the Atlantic Ocean. And clouds kind of like come together and there's a big storm and then they see this like giant ship kind of come out of nowhere and they board this big empty cruise ship and it's creepy and it's I guess it could be considered like a somewhat of a horror film but it's more thriller I'd say and they get on the ship and I think there's like four or five of them. I haven't seen this since it came out but it immediately came to mind when we're doing ship movies or boat movies and turns out that everything's not as it seems, Brian. And there may be some string theory going on. There may be some primer type shit happening. And there may be some coherence type disturbances in the air.
Strange things are afoot.
Strange things involving and including, I should say, a large man with an orange hood and slits in his eyes. I flick fested on the show.
I'm reading that it did not receive a theatrical release in the U.S.
I didn't see it in the theaters.
Obviously not.
Yeah. How did I see it? Wow, that's weird, Brian. I only see movies in theaters because, boy, oh boy, would it be cool to be able to like have some kind of magical box at home that plays things.
So my question is, how did you see it? Did you send away for it? Did you stream it? Where can people see this?
I may have streamed it back in the day. I haven't seen this. It's probably been 6 years since I saw it. I don't know. If you look up on Anderson and Brian, I bet you'd find a flick fashion.
Well, that's probably true. 82% Rotten Tomatoes.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good for that kind of movie.
Is this a little genre film? Like Green Room?
That was one of the grossest things you've had. Yeah, that's a good little genre
film.
It's
good genre. Fleck.
Next.
I said Fleck.
It's no Star Wars. Next.
It's definitely no Star Wars. Is this a horror movie?
All right, you know, close your fucking...
I'm looking. Close. I'm researching.
What's your number five best favorite?
Well, it's a very similar film, I will say.
But is James Bond going to make an appearance today?
No, there's no boat movies. Boat scenes. Oh, there's boat scenes. There's no boat movies for James Bond. I'm going to throw a movie out that is going to draw your ire, but I need to ask if you've ever watched. Have you ever seen Under Siege?
Yeah, yeah.
Under Siege is a good movie.
I saw Under Siege.
Anderson?
Yes, yeah, I actually have. Tommy Lee Jones and what's his fuck with the ponytail?
Steven Seagal?
Yeah. I saw it.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you prove it?
I mean, I remember nothing about it.
Oh, well, so it's like you haven't seen it.
Yeah, Under Siege. It's where Tommy Lee Jones is...
Die Hard in a boat.
He's like in siege, but it's under.
You haven't seen this movie.
They're attacking him under the siege. Go.
Put it on the list. Under Siege is a 1992 film by Andrew Davis, director of The Fugitive.
It's an action film, right?
It is very much
an action
film.
It's a good little genre film.
It is a good little genre film. Starring Steven Seagal, Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Busey in a fantastic role, and Erica Liniak. This is unfairly dismissed as Die Hard in a Boat. Die Hard in a Boat. Yeah, terrorists take over the boat, the ship that Steven Seagal is the cook for, and the cook gets, much like Bruce Willis in Die Hard, the cook gets free and starts to terrorize the terrorists, and you realize the cook isn't just a cook. He's something else. Ah, I won't step on it.
Hyena?
I will point out this. So this was a Steven Seagal movie released in 1992 the wave was cresting on Steven Seagal. I feel like the bloom was off the rose. This movie got 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is agreed. This is certified fresh. This is agreed that this is a good movie, and I will recommend it to you and people listening that you know what you're getting. It's high concept. I wouldn't call it predictable, but you know what you're getting. This is a formula picture, but it's really well done. This is a good movie, and you can't say that. It's one of only, I researched this, it's one of only three Steven Seagal movies to be certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and those are movies that he just happens to appear in, most of the other two. Was shockingly entered, nominated for 2 Oscars. This is a movie that did not...
For what?
Technical Oscars, effects and sound editing or whatever it was, but they generally don't nominate terrible, terrible big budget action movies. The only Steven Seagal movie to be nominated for an Oscar, legitimately excellent performances from Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey. Legitimately,
okay, all right. What makes it a good boat movie? I've heard a lot about the movie itself and everyone that was involved in making it. How is it a boat movie?
So here's the setup. Tommy Lee Jones, Steven Seagal he's the chef. He's the cook, and on this big naval vessel, and they're setting out to sea. And Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey, through some hijinks, take over the boat. It's sort of The Rock meets Die Hard. They took over the boat with
Captain
They took over the boat with a band of insiders that are up to no good. They want money. They want ransom, whatever they want. What's his face? Seagal gets lost. Gets sort of mixed up in the whole thing. Gets sort of slides under the radar. A captain or someone or some admiral. Not an admiral, but someone general. Above him. No, not a general. Someone above him, a lieutenant. Probably a lieutenant. Locks him in Locks him in the fridge and says, right. You can't leave. And that's when the boats get taken over by terrorists. Right.
Like Captain Phillips?
The terrorists realize, like, oh, there's someone still down there. Go get him. And, of course, they try to go get him. And they think, oh, he's just a cook. Go get him. And kill him. Turns out he's a badass. He's like a black belt badass. And he takes out terrorists, and now he's out to terrorize the terrorists. Uh-huh.
Sounds like Die Hard in a Boat.
It is Die Hard in a Boat.
Yeah.
But it is extremely well done. I mean, this is a movie that would probably be lower on the percentage scale for Rotten Tomatoes than it should be. And it's at 75%. Right. This is a legitimately good movie.
Sounds like Captain Phillips.
It is exactly the same as Captain Phillips, only replace Tom Hanks with Steven Seagal.
Well, it sounds like there's a miscreant taking over the boat for money gain.
Captain Phillips was like, the boat was like hijacked by like Somali pirates.
Hijacked.
Okay, you know what? In as much as that is the
hijacked.
In as much as that is the
number five for me.
The sweeping
number four for me.
Scope that you're absolutely right.
It's number four just for like me.
Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips. 2015
film. Can I point out that I left off hijacking because I know it'll be on your list?
It's not.
What?
Yeah.
I left off hijacking.
Well, put it on then, bud.
Oh. Undersea Drought.
Oh, here we go. This is fun. You know, I every now and again I get a little angry at the fact that we do top five every fucking week, and I think that we should let top five go every now and again. You know,
just
focus to go a little bit longer on the Flick Fashion or whatever, and then have a top five like, you know, every other week or something. And the top five just seems to be a bit much some weeks, right? Mm. But then I realized, oh, yeah, it's great that we do them because, like, Dead Calm comes up. And I don't remember ever talking about Dead Calm on this show.
I don't think it's
ever
come up.
And it's a great little genre pick. Great little genre pick.
What is the genre?
Thriller. Thriller. This is a movie from 1989, and it was directed by a man named Philip Noyce. Noyce. Ah, it's fucking Noyce. Philip Noyce, who he's a genre director himself. He's done Salt, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, all boring. dull. He's doing the upcoming Roots, Brian. Or is it upcoming or has it already come?
Salt was boring.
Bone, the Bone Collector, right? He's one of these guys. But this story is so small and good. Mm. Here's the storyline of Deadcom, all right? Nicole Kidman, she's a young, attractive lady. This is 1989, right? And Sam Neill is her older boyfriend, right? He's much older, longer in the tooth than he should be with such a young, beautiful woman. But otherwise, how is it going to make sense that they have a yacht? Right. He has a yacht and they're out there sailing. Actually, she has like some kind of tragic event happens in her life. And he says, you know what? Fuck therapy. Let's go out in the boat.
Nice.
We'll take you on a nice little vacation on my yacht. So they cruise out to the, like, this, I think it's off the shores of Australia.
Well, right? They're Australian, right? I assume they're wearing their accents and everything.
Yeah. And, they're out there and they're cruising, and then they come across a man who's frantically rowing his boat towards theirs, saying, thank God, save me. Get me on your boat. My boat's over there, but all my crewmates died of food poisoning. I'm the last one left, and I'm in trouble. You need to help me. And it's Billy Zane. Turns out Billy Zane's up to no good. This could have almost been on my top five home invasions, Brian.
Really? It's their home, kind of.
What happens is Billy Zane...
The domicile.
Billy Zane's on out on that ship, on their yacht, and he's got a taste for a little Australian redhead, and he wants some, and he tries to get some, and Sam Neill you know, goes to check out and see what's happening on his boat, where apparently the food poisoning killed the shipmates, and he finds something that would lead him to believe that that's not the case. Because usually when you die of food poisoning, you don't use your own blood to write things on walls, that kind of thing. So anyways, Deadcom, it's a good little... I feel like I'm just doing your thing now, but it's a good action thriller. And I feel like it's kind of forgotten. It doesn't come up. I don't know how often it comes up on this year's show. But 1989, directed by Philip Noyce.
Director of Clear and Present Danger.
I didn't like those movies, did you?
Yeah. Totally forgettable.
It was just Han Solo running around looking constipated with a bunch of black trucks, right? A lot of black SUVs driving in unison.
Should have put that on the poster.
Doesn't he just look like he's about to
have a heart attack?
He's
a lot of grimacing.
He has that concerned look. I don't like that concerned look.
Furrowed brow.
Don't like.
Yeah. Right. You know, would you have accepted the River Wild as a boat movie? It's a raft movie.
What is the River Wild?
Kevin Bacon.
Why am I drawing blanks in the River
Meryl
Wild?
Meryl Streep. Where like that's a good little genre effect. No, Kevin Bacon's like terror. I think it's Jason Strathairn. Or David Strathairn, I think it's 1992-ish.
Oh, yes.
Like he's on the, they're like flowing down a river, and like he like tries to kill the dad. He takes over the boat to escape from blah blah blah.
I think I did see this when I was working at the video store.
This is a decent movie.
I just spelled river with a Y.
Wild Stallions.
The River Wild, 1994. Yes, I was working at the video store, and yeah, is this your list?
No, I'm asking if you would have accepted it.
The fact that it's a 5.5 movie, which explains why I don't remember it at all, it's not a good movie, and I thought we were doing top five.
You know what?
The word top.
Well, I guess in my next, look up Under Siege and see what the score is on IMDb. I'm curious. Under Siege.
We're past Under Siege.
I'm guessing it's over seven.
I know it's a good little genre.
It's a good little genre flick. It's a good little $50 million genre flick.
You think that Under Siege is under seven?
No, over seven.
Over seven. Mm-hmm. Which I would also agree with you because you like it, and it's been proven time and time again that IMDb is overwrought with like boys, men, young boys who misogynists run rampant on the old IMDb, evidently, from a study that they did. And that would lend itself to Under Siege being highly rated, right?
Can I tell you something?
6.4.
Oh, no.
6.4.
Can I tell you something? When I don't know if you remember, because you've maybe seen Under Siege, maybe not. When Erica Liniak makes her character introduction, when you see Erica Liniak for the first time, that scene made me a man.
So you're saying your wiener got hard like it was on a ship a couple days ago with sycophants.
People, yeah, constantly flooding me with attention.
Did you like get back to your... You're with Christy, I'm assuming, right?
No, she wouldn't come.
She won't. I don't blame her at all. At all.
About the baby, though.
Walking around with like an ergo.
That's right. On my belly.
Dude, why are we not talking about your number three?
Number four.
Number four.
Number four. Another underrated movie. Doesn't get brought up on the show very often. Did you like The Perfect Storm?
No, I did not like that movie.
Why
at
not?
All.
Why did you like The Perfect Storm?
Because it's all... I don't like movies that are based on reality yet. Anyone who would know what that reality is fucking long gone. That's so funny. We're all making this shit up.
Wow, that's funny.
Stop it.
I literally... Okay. Wow, that is very funny you said that. I don't know if I ever brought this up on the show before then, because my lasting memory of The Perfect Storm from 2000, I went to see it with some work people who I was working with at the time.
The fishermen?
I hated them. No, I hated them all. And we went to see it in Santa Monica.
It's not like you.
And we left the theater, and I was like, well, that's a pretty good movie. I actually quite enjoyed that.
What?
And they were like the one girl I hated the most, she was like, how do they even know what happened? How do they even know? That might as well have all been made up. Like,
right.
She was a horrible person.
Smart woman.
Not smart at all. And you should feel very ashamed.
This means that she didn't like you. This means
very
she didn't like you.
For having the same opinion.
That's how you judge people. Like, if they like you, great people. If they hate you, terrible, awful person.
Says the guy who gets emails all the time about how right you are. It's called confirmation bias.
Wait, what?
Confirmation bias.
What are you talking about?
You judge a lot of what you feel is right and wrong about what you say by the emails that you get. And that is a self-selecting.
That's not true at all. That is absolutely untrue.
That is a self-selecting sample.
Wait, give me an example of that.
The Cinema Dicks out rate, 3-1, whatever you said earlier.
No, I just found it interesting that we have way less downloads with Cinema Dicks, but 3-1... A number of people that actually gave to groupers that were hitting me up with emails with their addresses, giving me like words of encouragement. For every 3 Cinema Dicks, I got 1 Film of All Their After Disasters. That's totally different from what you're talking about. That's not me being right or wrong.
I misunderstood.
That was an interesting little cross section of the listenership that people that are engaged. That's all.
I feel there's been examples in the past, but I don't have any that come to mind. The Perfect Storm. 2000.
Dude, I'm smarter than that. I mean, I take a very small sample of people that actually take the time to go to my website and send me a nice email about how I'm right. I'm not going to ever use that as like a fucking backup. That's something you would do.
It feels like you do it.
I don't.
It feels like you do it.
Well, when Logan, have you ever heard me say, "Oh, listeners have emailed me
you
and said
that
I'm correct"?
Like, I got an email that said, "Don't like when Brian does this, so Brian will not be doing this anymore."
I don't want to be part of this.
When did I last do that?
It's been a while. It's been a while. I just pointed out this happened.
Dude, if I did that, there would be no show. If I just simply said, here's what the listeners don't want you to do. I swear to God, man, I get emails every single day that have some kind of gripe about something you do on the show. And I'm sure you would, too, if you read your emails. But you don't fucking care to bother to talk to the listeners because you think you're above it. Because look at your smug face.
I let them come to me.
Go.
Perfect Storm.
I don't do that, dude.
What?
All right, go ahead. Why do you like this movie?
I like Perfect Storm. I like the limited storytelling. I like the fact that almost the entire thing takes place on the boat. I thought it was a really effective use of... I love the characters. William Fichtner and Mark Wahlberg and George Clooney, all these great character actors. I thought they were very authentic, authentically cast. These guys were very viable at the time, to me anyway, as hardcore fishermen. Hardcore fishermen.
Well done.
Yeah, I like the Perfect Storm. I feel like it got unfairly... dismissed as sort of a special effects movie because remember the trailer relied so heavily on the actual the wave and everything.
That
and
was
like
kind
thing.
Of that was groundbreaking at the time.
It was big special effects.
But why do you want to see like a bunch of guys in the rain on a boat that you know they're all going to drown? Why would you want to watch that?
Spoiler alert.
Everyone knows that, Brian. I said that by saying, how do you know? I don't like that they milked a tragedy and said it's based on a true story. Yeah, lots of guys go out and they drown. You don't fucking make big movies about it because you don't know what actually happened.
Yeah.
If they had one survivor, I would have probably been more on board.
But isn't that like those Everest movies where like you know there's no survivors? But
no, there's always
anyway?
Survivors.
I just feel like
Everest came out last year.
What's
what
the
Brian's
point of
talking
what's,
about?
What's the point of making movies if you don't take a?
You know what? Great example. United 93. But they did have they were talking. They were talking there in the squawk box
for a very
on United 93.
Yeah, for a very small specific window of that flight, literally the cockpit and the people that took over the plane.
I did it on Cinema Dicks, but we were talking about Marky Wahlberg cuz Patriots Day. And now that we're talking about Marky Wahlberg with the old Perfect Storm and also United 93, it is kind of a perfect storm for me to bring it up here for a moment. Did you ever hear his quote? Marky Wahlberg's quote after the 9/11 attacks?
Oh, wasn't it something like, a good thing I wasn't on that plane?
Yeah.
Or something along those lines? Not good thing, but I mean, like,
I'll read it verbatim. It's unbelievable.
It is quite unbelievable. Unself-aware.
But, you know, he was in the crime of passion. You know, he was like, I feel like what his statement was a crime, even though I'm huge First Amendment opponent. But some things just like, why'd you say that? I kind of liked you. Now I can't.
Yeah, I like you a little less.
Like you a lot less there. But, you know, it's been a long time since he said it. But I think that he was heated when he said it, you know.
Yeah,
but it gives you a little window into a soul.
Could have been playing to the crowd a little bit, too.
When we come back, I'll read it verbatim.
Okay.
For those of you who don't listen to Cinema Dicks, you will hear it for the first time here.
Can you do it in his accent?
No. I'm not going to try and do a Boston accent.
Number four for you, right?
Are we?
Oh, you're on three already.
Are we on three?
We're taking the one break.
We're taking a break.
We're taking the one break.
Yeah, just one. After three.
All right, then, after the break. Keep me honest. Make sure I look up Marky's. Life of Pi.
Oh, good.
2012.
Left off the list.
Love this movie.
Really good movie.
Most of the movie takes place on a boat. He does leave the boat for a little while to go on an island. Mm-hmm. I have been shamed for loving this movie as much as
Why?
I do. Because I
whom?
Actually read the book as well. Get this, Brian. Mm-hmm. An email came in from a listener.
Oh.
So I probably should just throw it away. Right. Give it no credence.
Well, you can give it some credence.
Jan Martel wrote the novel. Mm-hmm. And Jan Martel, I thought this when I saw Life of Pi, directed by Ang Lee, 2012, was one of the most original things I've ever seen, one of the most original stories I've ever heard. And turns
Complex.
Out there is a book that was written a few decades before Jan Martel wrote Life of Pi that involved a man fleeing a sinking ship, mm-hmm. jumping onto a boat and being trapped with nothing but big cats on a small little mm-hmm. lifeboat. So not the most original idea, but I guess Jan Martel has since... given that some credit.
But it's more about the execution than it is about the
also, what gives
anyone
me...
That's just a concept.
Pause.
Anyone can do a good or bad version of that.
But not take all the credit. Also, what gives
me
pause in loving Life of Pi as much as I do, which I saw at least twice in the theater, maybe three times. It's the one where I took my wife right before she was my wife, and I was like having tears in my eyes because it's such a great movie. And she like leans over to me like halfway through, and I was thinking, "This is great. I'm watching like my favorite movie of the year, and I got my soon-to-be wife here, and you know, we're enjoying
this
fucking masterpiece." Yeah. And she leans over and goes, "Is it almost over? When does this end?"
And you thought that's the future mother of my children.
And I thought, "Fuck, is it too late? Is it too late?" Anyways, Life of Pi. Also, apparently, I've talked to people. I actually met somebody at camp who actually worked on the film, and evidently that tiger was not treated too well, almost drowned a few times. So I have a hard time loving this movie with these facts.
Am I dim, or how much of it was a real tiger?
There's a lot of real tiger. There's a lot of CGI tiger.
Okay, I remember the CGI, but that was more in the interaction portion.
There was a lot of real tiger. But, you know, do I have to really go on and on about Life of Pi? It's a great,
it
great
movie.
Movie. It's Ang Lee.
Possibly unreliable narrator? Possibly.
Possibly.
Probably.
For surely. Absolutely. You know that...
But did he ever admit to being... Because the reporter kind of deduced the whole thing, but I don't think he ever kind of like copped to it. Like,
he
got
does
me.
Leave it ambiguous at the end. But watching it, much like Nocturnal Animals, like it's giving you an idea. It's giving you... It's like an allegory or like giving you... symbolic representation of what this would feel like. Like Bellflower. This is another example of that. Life of Pi. Oh, it's just so fucking good. I would if this was playing right on the street right now, I would leave right now and go watch it again.
Right now.
It's so good. And I went in with arms folded, ready to hate. Mm. And it turned out to be, I think, my favorite film that year.
Might have been.
But, you know, it starts off with a ship going down, and it's some incredible, incredible filmmaking with that. And then he ends up on a boat with a bunch of animals. An orangutan, a hyena,
a zebra.
Not a hyena. Was there a hyena? I think there was a hyena. It's been a couple of years.
It was a tiger, and it was a...
There was a tiger.
Zebra
yes.
and another thing.
There was an orangutan.
Yeah.
Gerard Depardieu.
That's right.
No, I heard that he drinks 22 bottles a day now of wine.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems like it would be possible. Then again, he is very fat.
I heard that. 22 a day.
Number three for me. Another movie that's a bit of an obvious choice. I will, I'll clean it up with some less obvious choices next. But all I want to say about Pirates of the Caribbean, the original Pirates, is that this is a movie that was based on a theme park ride and starred a not very hot Johnny Depp and had everything going against it.
Right.
It is a tremendous movie. It is dragged down by the sequels that came after it, each one worse than the last. And people forget, I think, it's almost like a punchline now. I remember there was a the Pirates of the Caribbean trailer before Star Wars Rogue One, or Rogue One Star Wars Story, and there were a little bit of snickers, I think, a little snickers in the audience, a little bit of like guffaws, a little pirates. People forget, that might have been you, people forget just how tremendous of a movie the first Pirates was, for what it was, a good little genre flick.
You know what, it was all because of Johnny Depp. Like, he nailed it.
Well, I will give a lot of credit to Gore Verbinski. That man knows how to construct a scene, an action scene, a kinetic action scene. That is a tremendous movie. Johnny Depp's a huge reason why I put him back on the map. Made him an A-lister again. Don't forget, people forget that Johnny Depp was not doing quite so well, at least in terms of like Hollywood box office, all that stuff in the early
2000s. Still not. You can say that right now.
He has fallen quite a bit again. But after that, he was up for best actor for playing a pirate in Pirates of the Caribbean. That's crazy. People forgot how good it was.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up next, more movies, but movies, and we're gonna pay off some gambling. See if this actually is the last Film Vault ever.
Right.
What's up, buddy?
It's so nice when the read is actual natural and organic, and I don't have to like make stuff up or
helps
like,
a
know,
lot.
Lean on you. Mm-hmm. My new favorite go-to T-shirt mm-hmm. that I always make sure is washed, and then first one when it's out of the wash is on my back.
The number one draft pick.
My Jack Thread shirt. It's nice. Now my new favorite shirt. No logo, no nothing. It's just the softest, most gentle shirt that I have in my closet at the moment. And it's just a light blue plain shirt, and I love it. Jack Threads.
I got two great long sleeve button ups from there that I was very casual. And I loved them. And I think I mentioned the last time we talked about Jack Threads. I got paint
you
on one. Yeah, I got paint on it from the tree base, the Christmas tree base. And now it's a sad reminder. Like, oh, this shirt that I love is now ruined by Christmas.
But you know what? It doesn't break the bank. You can go get it.
No, really. I think we're going to, actually. Because the cool thing about Jack Threads, you guys, is you can... The worst thing about shopping online for clothes, you find some great deals, but then you get in and it like, doesn't fit quite right, or it doesn't fit at all, or it fits a little billowy, or it's too tight, or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, kind of, I don't have the process of returning this or bring it back to the store, or whatever it is. Jack Threads does the whole home try-on thing. They'll send you a pile of clothes, whatever you want, and whatever you don't want, send it back. Free of charge, no charge to you, free shipping. It's super easy.
It's all built into the price, and it makes it very, very convenient, especially for the guys out there. Because I know you guys hate going to them, especially these days. Like, imagine you need clothes right now, and you got to go to and fight the Christmas.
Oh, that's right.
Just send away. Jack Threads, no lines.
Please do.
Boom.
Go to jackthreads.com and enter TFV when you submit for your tryout order for 20% off anything you keep. That's 20% off at jackthreads.com. Jackthreads.com, code TFV, to save 20% on anything you keep. Never buy before you try ever again.
So, Brian.
What's up, buddy?
My fridge has been devoid of water for about 2 weeks now. You know why?
Is the wife hydrating?
No, we're drinking out of the faucet, which is not good because I hate the idea of lugging water from the market.
Can you imagine?
To the car. No. To the house, through the garage.
Plus, you got whatever kids stuff you got to handle, or whatever other groceries you got, whatever kids have.
It's its own trip back to the car. It's always a separate trip, and that's one of the many reasons why we said yes to Hint. We love the idea of deliverable water, especially if it's got a twist.
I'm gonna make you upset right now. On this cruise that I went on, I got a massage. I went to the spa and I tried the water, the orange infused water, and I sipped. And I was
not
like,
as good.
I'm like. Just like Hint, but not quite as good.
Not as good as Hint.
Yeah. Spa water.
So what Brian's hinting at is that Hint water is that they have very, very subtle flavors.
Because it had been sitting there, you know what I mean, for like hours and was diluted. I'm like, I'd rather have some Hint water, I'll be honest with you.
Hint water is infused with actual fruit flavors.
Yeah.
My favorite's pineapple.
Ooh, pineapple was good. Hey, guys, if you want to get a single variety pack shipped directly to your door, including three bottles each of Hint's four most popular flavors, the aforementioned pineapple, watermelon, crisp apple, and blackberry, it's only $24. You can get it for just $15 at drinkhint.com/TFV. That's drinkhint.com/TFV. drinkhint.com/TFV. Anderson, I'm not gonna lie to you. When I was a kid, and then even into like my teenage years, when the internet was first becoming a thing,
internet. Yes.
I would fantasize. This is not a joke or exaggeration.
Walking on a cruise ship.
I fantasized like someday I'm gonna be able to go on and watch any sketch, any episode ever of SNL. It's gonna be right there. And now.
Wait, you went SNL before you went boobs?
Oh no, I did about a month straight of porn. And
no, but like you were fantasizing about being able to see any SNL sketch.
No, because
rather than any boob.
No, because I was able to see boobs in the infancy of the internet. That's all there was boobs.
That's a good point.
And so
you have to wait though. For
I know
the lines to like
I know,
one
yeah,
line at a time
down a little bit.
Ugh.
But CISO.com has every episode of every SNL ever, including the new ones, posted like a day or two.
24 hours
later.
Yeah,
like 24 hours after their air. So
it's
see the latest Donald Trump roast.
It's C,
Lampoon.
Like I-C-U. C-S-E-E. So I heard somebody else do a read for this, and I imagined in my head C.
Like
the letter C.
Yeah.
It's CISO. And also, like, look at the price. What does it cost you there?
Well, it's 2 months free if you use our promo code.
But after that, what is it?
That's a good question.
$3.99 a month.
Oh, that's a good price.
$3.99 a month. And, and here's another thing that when I heard this person doing the read, like, here's what you don't think. So many of us, you know, we go out, we have a couple beers here and there, right? You get with your buddies.
I've been known.
You have like a beer for like $4.
You're having
right?
a beer right now.
Yeah, I'm having a beer right now, free. But, you know, a beer is going to cost you $4 or $5.
For you.
You know, the sure. amount of joy and happiness that beer brings you, fleeting,
yes.
right? $4 a month, $3.99 a month for CISO. It's just going to give you day in, day out comedy. It's going to make you a funnier person, a happier person, and give you more humor in your day-to-day life for less than the cost of a beer.
That's a good point, buddy.
For less than the cost of a beer.
CISO.com, S-E-E-S-O. Go there right now to sign up for 2 months free with the promo code TFV at checkout. That's CISO.com, promo code TFV. Yeah, welcome back. Top 5 boat movies coming up next for me, Anderson. Boat movies. The highest grossing movie of 1973. And a movie I love from just a few years back. Love. Did not get enough attention. Love. Snubbed at the Oscars.
Oh, really?
Snubbed.
I know what you're talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's hear your number 2.
I didn't put that on there.
Good. I could talk about
it. Left it for you because you think it's a perfect movie.
I love it.
You love white men. On
you
boats.
You know me.
On boats.
Let's
wearing white like shorts.
White shorts? What are you talking about?
He's like,
he's
dressed like a yachty
man
the entire movie.
You know my taste. All right, number 2 for you.
Number 2 for me.
You love white men. I sure do.
Finally, this is on a list. I think it probably must have been on a list at some time or another, but it's been a while. Talking about Dead Sailor Society, Brian. Did you ever finally get a chance to catch up with White Squall?
No.
It was
unavailable on DVD on
White
Netflix for a long time.
White Squall, directed by Brian's favorite director.
I know.
Yet he's never
really,
seen it.
Really
that's how my, when I was explaining to my wife, a little behind this curtain here, looks like Brian and his wife and my wife will be doing a show in the next week or two. We're going to get together.
Live show.
Do the wives show. They're going to give their top 5 list.
Top 5 movies our wives
it's
like.
It's going to be painful and brutal at times. And Jillian, my wife, she's like, I don't know if I want to do it. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's the first show after the new year. Logan's gonna be out of town. We gotta do an episode.
Why
this would be a good one.
She's
like, I don't really like movies. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, neither does Christy. And I'm like, wait, neither does Brian. When you think about it, I'll be the only one there that actually loves
movies.
Yeah.
Us three combined.
How does your favorite director have a movie out that I've said your co-host has been saying for years is really good?
I don't know that Ridley Scott's my favorite director. I do love him, but
who's your favorite?
I don't know.
Once again, doesn't love movies.
Spielberg. Michael Bay? Spielberg. Michael Bayberg. Spielbay.
So angry. So angry.
You dropped everything just there.
A lot of shit.
Not just the mic.
A lot of shit. Headphones too. All right, anyways, White Squall.
Oh, George Lucas. Sorry.
It's a very, very good movie. It's cross-cut with like flashbacks, and there's like court scenes, and you know, things go awry, but...
So it's a court movie.
No.
Okay.
So it's a boat movie.
Courtroom drama.
And it's Jeff Bridges at his most Jeff Bridgedless. Bridgedness. Logan keeps looking at his watch, and it's making me feel like...
smart watch. I was just looking at text.
That's a new thing now. Everyone's going to think if you're just like looking at text, am I boring you, sir?
Am I boring you? Pick up the pace.
I've never seen anyone look at their watch so much.
We should point out real quick, we didn't mention submarine movies, not on the list. No submarines, as you can tell. Well, that is another episode.
Even though they're called U-boats.
That is another episode.
Jeremy Sisto's in this.
Hey,
wow.
Sisto.
It's been a long time. But yes, Scott thong, Wolf thong, is thong, in thong. It. Jeff so Bridges.
Sisko.
Brian, stop it. It's not Sisko. It's Sisto. Jeremy Sisto. I just looked him up for something. Jeremy Sisto. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But this is a very well executed movie. Ridley Scott doing his Ridley Scott thing. It's 1996, so he's kind of at the peak of Ridley Scott. And this
oh, you
movie
think
for
so?
Whatever, yeah, he's doing really good work right around there.
He's had a truly up and down career. I mean, he's had stuff that kind of came and went. And he's had iconic, legendary movies.
Well, let me tell you what he did right before and right after. Right,
Thelma and Louise is like 90. One,
he had just come off 1492, Conquest of Paradise, which was an epic. And
that's another one I haven't seen. Well, should I see it? I don't even know if that or the,
then he did White Squall. Then he did G.I. Jane right after White Squall. I fucking love G.I. Jane. Then he did Gladiator. I'm one of the only people on the planet that didn't like fall for that shit.
Good for you.
I'm gonna get emails. I'm gonna get an email saying you're right. I didn't like it either, and I'll be like, feel like, oh, thank God.
Then it was Black Hawk Down.
Then he did Hannibal, then Black Hawk Down, Mastic Man. Yeah, you know, he's an eclectic director. But White Squall, Troubled Youth, Jeff Bridges being their commander and leader, teaching them discipline, having them like learn about boating while defeating their fears, conquering their fears, and then having to answer to the man. Sounds very familiar. Feels very like Dead Poets Society, but it's done at sea. The characters are there. They're on par with the characters that you find in Dead Poets Society, but for whatever reason, it doesn't get the same love. Maybe because it came after? I don't know. I'm not going to say it sings quite like Dead Poets Society does, but this is, you know, right on the heels, and it's a movie definitely worth watching. And it just has that epic like scope that it just looks so good. There's so much atmosphere going on with Ridley Scott during this era. You know where he kind of started to lose that was Gladiator, when he started getting more in the digital drop frames and that kind of shit. I really like the atmosphere that he created. You know, obviously going back to Alien, it's like the atmosphere.
Sure.
You felt like you're on an alien
Blade
planet.
Runner.
You really felt Blade Runner, not too distant future. Like really, you bought
it's
in.
All atmosphere.
But when I'm saying atmosphere, I mean like textually.
Yeah.
Like looking on the screen, like there's always like some kind of smoke in the air.
That's the thing about Blade Runner, is that world is so memorable and iconic. It's instantly recognizable.
And you think about Ridley Scott's movies now, like, you know, after that with Gladiator and Matchstick Men, even though I really liked it, it's like everything's pretty crisp and clean.
Yeah.
And, you know, he lost that
Hannibal,
clay.
Especially. Yeah.
Hannibal, yeah. Yeah. Mm. You know, a lot of it's up to DP, but a good director is going to
have something to say about that.
For sure. All right. So in it, White Squall, really, really good movie all about boats, as well as teen angst once again.
Number two for me. The highest grossing film of 1973 released, this is almost exactly the date, December of 72. And so it ended up being the highest grossing movie the next year. When was the last time we talked about Poseidon Adventure? The Poseidon Adventure
was almost on my list, but it's a ship, right?
Yeah, but
big ass ship.
We're not differentiating at this point.
I remember people back in the day going, Titanic, Poseidon Adventure, so much better.
I don't know about that. Poseidon Adventure is very good, but let's not. One's a cinematic landmark, the other's a good little genre pick.
You know what really hurt me? While I was sitting around in these waiting rooms and whatnot, there was a book that was brought by the person that I was kind of chauffeuring around. And chaperoning around and seeing two things, and she, the person wanted to borrow one of my books. They grabbed Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs by Chuck Klosterman, and I was leafing through it, and the page that I landed on was talking. He was talking about only idiots like Titanic. No one that he knows that has any kind of intelligence actually likes Titanic, and I was like, that fucker, that son of a bitch. Because you know why? I five-starred that shit.
Yeah, Ryan. You imagine that.
I love that
movie. Titanic.
And I shouldn't have.
Is Titanic number one on your list?
No, it's not. Didn't make the list because it's a ship.
That's true. Poseidon Adventure was remade in 2006. It wasn't even a. It wasn't.
Did
even,
you see that?
Yes, I did. It wasn't even that bad of a remake. It was just totally unnecessary. It was like, all right, well, that was just kind of came and went and was neither here nor there. The original is
kind of like Ben-Hur.
A little. Actually, I heard Ben-Hur was pretty bad. Did you see it?
No, I would.
The
not.
Remake. Yeah. What would you say? Would you say, okay, Poseidon Adventure in 1972 is a little bit dated, but only because of the sort of the 70s and the clothes and
it feels like a 70s movie, and it should. You want it to.
But I was going
to
say it also feels undated because it's the whole thing takes place. If you don't know the plot, the New Year's Eve on a cruise ship and a giant wave, rogue wave comes over. The captain, by the way, Leslie Nielsen, in a straight role, dramatic role, knocks the boat upside down.
Used to do that a lot.
Down.
That was most of what he's known for,
course,
right?
Yeah. Well, not known for, but it was probably the first 30 years of his career.
Right.
Knocks the boat upside down, and the people who survive this violent capsizing have to make their way to the top, which is the bottom of the boat, which is now the top,
right,
in order to get free.
So they're like leaning against the chandelier.
It's a high concept, super high concept disaster film genre flick, and it is super well done. I think it holds up in terms of its pace. It does not feel like a 70s movie in terms of its in terms of the actual content, maybe some of the decor and the costumes, all that stuff, of course, sideburns and all that. But it is a this movie holds up. I would watch this today.
Ernest Borgnine and Gene Hackman.
Yeah, Roddy McDowell.
Shelley Winters. Red Buttons is in this. Yeah. This is a movie that like it should be like on your queue, especially if you're going back and studying film, like one by one,
yes,
like I did when
this
I was growing up. This is a movie that should be seen by you.
Seven Oscar nominations.
It's no Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, which also 3, 2, 1.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Which they also needlessly remade.
Mm.
Needlessly.
Needlessly.
Oh, Taking
of
Pelham.
Was that with Travolta? The
yes.
remake?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good, the original. Logan, you've seen Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3?
Oh, yeah.
The original?
Yeah, yeah.
So good.
I saw it after you had recommended it like years ago.
From beginning to, from top to bottom, just the score alone is so fucking great. All right. Number one for me.
One.
Holy shit. Finally. This is a movie that, you know what? The majority, I can't, every time this movie comes up, I just start reading new facts about it and like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And wow. There's an entire documentary that's actually better than the movie itself called Burden of Dreams. I'm talking about Fitzcarraldo. I'm talking about Werner Herzog's Fitzcarraldo, based on a real story about a rubber tycoon or would-be rubber tycoon, rubber tree tycoon, and starring Klaus Kinski. 1982, 2 hours and 38 minutes.
Wow.
It is an epic film, and it is...
Is it a foreign language film?
It's confusing, because it's supposed to be German language, but it's actually shot in English. There's a lot of dubbing, kind of like the spaghetti westerns, because most of the cast spoke English and didn't speak German.
Claudia Cardinale.
Yes, she is in there. Do you know her? Are you familiar with her?
Yeah, from the spaghetti westerns. From Once Upon a Time in the West, right?
Yes, she is in that. Huh. But Klaus Kinski, this is where that story comes from.
Still alive.
There's is she? How old?
Yeah. Born in 38.
I don't know if you've heard
Christ.
That doesn't mean that she's that old, Brian. I mean, she's like in their 80s.
I thought she'd be dead by now.
Jesus Christ. Why are you freaking out about born in 38? Who cares?
I want to see a current picture.
I'm almost born in 45, and she looks like a spring chicken. That's just 7 years later.
Claudia.
All right, would you get off to Claudia? Dude, you can't do two things at once.
Keep talking.
So yeah, Poseidon Adventure. It's
no, you're talking about.
Oh,
you
caught me.
Come on. Good,
well done, buddy. Well done.
Fitzcarraldo.
So
I'm listening.
This is where that crazy Burden of Dreams is a phenomenal documentary. It's right up there with Hearts of Darkness. What Hearts of Darkness is to Apocalypse Now,
oh, wait,
which is another
Fitzcarraldo is a documentary.
No.
Oh,
listen. This is why you got to fucking close. I'm gonna close your fingers in there. Okay. Thank you. Listen to me, Brian. Burden. I understand. I talk fast. Okay. But you can't do two things at once. You got your little ADD.
I can barely do one thing at once.
I read your book. I know you got the ADD.
I do.
All right. I know you want like everyone to think you're the smartest guy in the room or you're good at trivia. I know all these things about you, right? I know all your weaknesses.
YOLO.
I know about the YOLO. Listen to me
about
this.
I know
about
the YOLO.
I know all about it. Right. If you were going to die, you would go out and get some weed and you would vape it. Yes.
I have a hard time concentrating.
Hmm. Fitzcarraldo is based on a real story about a guy who takes a ship. It's like one of these Dixie ships. I don't even know how to describe it. It's a steamship. It's like a steamship,
okay,
right? And he wants to bring opera to the Amazon people. And he's going to do that. But in doing so, he wants to also, he had bought this parcel of land where he's going to mine it for all of its rubber, because rubber was a big thing back in the day.
Yep.
Rubber trees.
Rubber trees.
Could only get it. And like he found, it was almost like gold, but he found this one little parcel that no one had taken yet. Problem is, couldn't get to it by boat. But he got himself like a one of these steamships, big ship. It's almost like a mini cruise ship. So that's why it's kind of on the fence. And he's going to take it over this ridge because to get to it the right way, it would take a lot of extra time and he would have to go over rapids and whatnot. It's just insane. What I was starting to say is documentary called Burden of Dreams is to Fitzcarraldo what Hearts of Darkness,
okay,
George Hickenlooper's Hearts of Darkness is to Apocalypse
Now,
yeah, which was on my list at 1.2 when we were doing... Stop.
I'm just messing my cord.
No, you're going to open the computer. You can't help yourself. You absolutely were.
Hey, what's that?
George Hickenlooper did Apocalypse Now. Fitzcarraldo, the movie feels dated. It is very a Werner Herzog, for better or for worse. He's not the most captivating director at all times. He does wander. He doesn't give a fuck about his audience sometimes. He gets kind of lost in the spirit of things. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you read the behind the scenes, and they do cover some of this in Burden of Dreams, like, he really fucked over a lot of people to make this movie. Indigenous people, like, put them way the fuck out. And, you know, I don't think that today's Werner Herzog does such atrocities, but it was all about making the movie. This is where that folklore comes of Werner Herzog holding a gun at Klaus Kinski just off frame, just off the camera, and making him do his lines the way that he wants him to do them, because Klaus Kinski was one of the least cooperative actors in the history of cinema. And just if you want to watch Burden of Dreams, and if you don't have time, or you're just looking for, just start reading some of the trivia stuff that did you know on IMDb about Fitzcarraldo. It's so fucking entertaining. The folklore around Fitzcarraldo is actually better than the movie itself. The movie itself is a massive achievement, and what they actually did, and how this real story goes, Brian, is they couldn't get his ship to that little place where the rubber trees were. Okay. The only way was like over this mountain, this hill, to actually take the boat, take indigenous people, and slog it up and over the ridge to the other side. This giant, massive boat. They did it using some special effects and bulldozers, but Werner Herzog and his crew actually moved a boat over this mountain, and they documented it, and it's in the movie. Oh, it's so good. Oh, it's so good. And the real story, Werner being the crazy German that he is, real story is Fitzcarraldo.
Where do you want to access Fitzcarraldo?
I'm sure every movie's available now. The real story, Brian, the guy who actually took the ship, and he did do this, but he disassembled it and took it over in pieces.
This makes more sense.
But Werner's like, hey, let's actually take the whole ship over, because that'll be more grand.
Yeah, there you go. Grand.
So Fitzcarraldo is my number one boat movie. Number one boat movie, Fitzcarraldo. Just all the folklore that goes on around it, and all the trivia about it. And when I say trivia, I mean the interesting facts that surround it, as well as the Burden of Dreams, which is one of my all-time favorite documentaries.
Apparently, God, it's streaming on Vudu.
I don't know
if you're a Vudu subscriber.
Do I just sound like an old man when I'm just tired of everything having a new spelling? You know, because it's like Vudu is a good example.
V-U-D-U?
Yeah, it's like it's skin condoms, S-K-Y-N. It's because the domains are already taken for everything else.
There must be a...
so we're just making up new spelling for everything now?
This is interesting. It's streaming on three platforms. It's streaming on Fandor. Don't know Fandor. Vudu.
I've heard of Fandor.
Really? Fandor. And Tubi TV. No, Tubi TV. Must be a European thing. I don't know what that is.
I know Fandor for sure.
$3 on iTunes.
Yeah, why don't you just go straight to the source? And I'm sure it's on YouTube too. I can't imagine Werner Herzog on top of that.
Hunting down Paris?
I can't imagine. Yeah, he either thinks it's totally okay to watch his movies for free, or he's very, very against it.
I doubt he cares.
Either way, he's got his heels dug in pretty deep.
to caring or not caring. Number one for me. Did you predict my number one is All Is Lost?
Yeah.
I loved All Is Lost. Now, did we see eye to eye on All Is Lost? Did you love it as
much as me? Yeah, I came in here at FlickFest and loving it. I think I assigned it to you. I was surprised that you loved it as much as you did. I really, really liked it. Impressed by it.
This is one of the very few movies I walked out of being at the end. I walked out of the theater with tears streaming.
Well, you might have been on some medication. That day.
I may have been, but I don't think I was, because I rewatched that scene for the prep for this episode. Got a little dusty in the house.
Oh, Jesus.
Got a little dusty.
I don't understand. I it's a really good movie, but you make me like it less.
All Is Lost is written and directed by J.C. Shandor, director of Margin Call and A Most Violent Year. Most Violent Year. Wish it was better. It was good.
Most Violent Year was like...
it's good, but it was not...
It was like all good. Like a bunch of like outtakes of The Godfather, but not as good.
Yeah, a lot of procedural stuff.
Yeah. It's like a B story of The Godfather that hit the cutting room floor. Didn't make the final cut.
Yeah. All Is Lost stars Robert Redford, and only Robert Redford. It's a great example of limited storytelling. No dialogue. People know the basic story, right? He's a man who finds himself, people say, lost at sea. He's not really lost at sea. He's sailing.
No,
he's
but attempting. Lost at sea goes both ways.
That's true. He starts off knowing where he's going and knowing what he's doing.
If you don't have any hope of getting to land, but you know exactly where you are, you're still lost.
And he is awoken one morning, not by the sun or birds or seagulls or anything, but by a giant container, fallen off a container ship.
Happens all the time.
And crashed right into the hull of his boat.
Yes.
And he is taken on water. And he's a You get the idea that he's an accomplished seaman. He's a man who knows what he's doing out there on the open ocean, and he attempts to patch the hole, and he attempts to make the proper procedures, radioing for help and patching the hole and trying to bail out water. He's doing all the stuff right, and it's man versus nature. It's man versus nature, and nature is gaining. Nature is gaining fast. And Robert Redford, however old he was at the time, 70 years old or something like that, he's trying his best, but he's just one old man out there on the ocean all alone, fighting against Poseidon, Neptune, mm-hmm. the god of the sea.
The ocean, bro.
And okay, so not to wax or get too precious about it, but it is a beautiful allegory, the whole movie, for, I don't know what you want to call it, faith or religion,
perseverance,
addiction. I mean, it's the title, it's all in the title, all is lost. Like,
it's completely up to you. Well, you make your own.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, because I took away from it, and I think the movie is very much open.
You can just lay down and die.
You can take what you want from it. The movie I took away from it in order to be saved, literally and figuratively, you have to give everything up. You have to give it all up and say, I'm powerless. And this could be how, you know, addicts look at their recovery in the world. It's like, I'm powerless, or I have no power in this situation. I'm literally at the mercy of the elements, at the man above, whatever you want to call
it. If that saved him, I would agree with you. But that's not what saved him.
Well, are we talking about the ending?
No, we're not going to do that.
Well, as Anderson
there
said,
is that one scene where, like, he does. I probably shouldn't say this, but he thinks he's going to die. So he slits his wrists and sharks start circling.
Yeah, faster and faster.
Because the blood goes into the water.
Yeah.
And then he actually rides because he's such
it creates a whirlpool effect.
No, he actually, you don't remember.
No.
He hops on back of one of the sharks and rides it to shore.
It feels like I would remember that.
And he keeps like squirting his blood out of his wrist, like in front of the shark
going.
So it was like a
carrot on the stick.
On the mule. Yeah, that's how we got there.
Yeah, I don't remember that. It might have been in the outtakes or the directors. You might have watched.
I wasn't crying, so I could focus.
Oh,
I was
looking through the streaming through tears. Anyway, I found the ending to be very moving, very powerful, and very poignant.
It was very off brand for the rest of the movie.
It really was. It didn't fit. That was actually if I had to quibble, Anderson, with this movie, I would say that's the one part.
Didn't pick.
If I had to pick nits, I would say that's the one part that didn't really land for me.
We'll talk more about that when the show's over. But I don't quite. Oh, whatever. That's a mark of a good movie. If two different people take away something very, very. If two different people take away something very important but very different, it's very accomplished. That means that movie is very accomplished.
I agree. And both end up with the same opinion that it's good.
And you know what? I'm not really all about, like, what's the message of this movie? What is this movie trying to tell me? I like a timestamp. I like a reflection of society, or just like a really Manchester by the Sea. It's hopefully a story that we will never, ever have to live, be in his shoes. But we get to see it, and we get to see the humanity behind it. And it doesn't have to be telling me anything or making me leave the theater feeling like, that's what I'll do. And that, you know, as much as I love movies, no movie's ever going to fix me. You know?
God knows. Yeah, I agree. All is lost. Didn't beat me over the head with this message, but the message to me, and as I took away from it, was very clear. In order to be saved, whatever that means to you, whether you're literally out to sea or you're looking for spiritual saving or somewhere in between, in order to be saved, you got to give it all. You got to let it all go. All needs to be
very, very good movie. Could have easily been on my list. I left it there because I didn't want to double up. I knew you'd have it all.
I love that movie.
All right, let's.
Listener top five. Listen
top five.
All right, number five. Actually, tied for fifth, we have The Hunt for Red October.
No subs, please.
As well as Das Boot.
No subs.
Okay.
Das
Submarine.
Probably should have thought ahead of that.
All right, we'll move Poseidon Adventure up to number
five.
What is that? I've never.
That's a fun movie. The remake in 2006?
Original.
Okay.
Number four, we got Captain Ron.
Captain Ron?
Never heard of it, but it got a lot of votes.
What? Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
But that's like a 30% movie.
No, but it's like an 80s film. I could see like being like comfort food for a lot of
people.
I can
see there's some nostalgia, yes.
It's enjoyable.
Number three, we have Life of Pi.
Yeah.
Number two, All is Lost.
What?
Number two.
And the number one.
Wait, what do you think it's going to be? Speed, two.
Is it an obvious one, like Titanic, maybe?
Yeah, it's going to be Titanic.
Number one, as voted on by our listeners, is Jaws.
What? Jaws, of course. Good call. But here's the thing with Jaws. You know, I had it lingering. It was on the initial, like, 27 movie list that I jotted down. Jaws is more about the shark and less about the boat. Even though the boat's a huge part of it, and it does take place on a boat. But it's less about the boat and way more about the shark, obviously. But, you know, there could be an argument made that it's more about the men.
Yeah, I don't think of it as a boat movie, even though it does take place largely on
a
boat.
It does take place. The last act takes place on a boat, but leading up to that, there's a lot of shit off that boat. So, yep. So three of those five are disqualified.
Extremely surprised you didn't put a hijacking on. I really thought
I liked a hijacking a lot.
You assigned that to me.
Well, at the time, it was out in theaters, and I wanted you to see it and enjoy it. I think it was still in theaters, right?
I don't believe so. But
it was the same story.
I think
story.
Captain Phillips has come out, and you were like, now you have to see a hijacking.
They're both their own movies.
Captain Phillips is a little underrated.
Yeah, so is hijacking.
Yeah, you're right.
Hijacking involved a cook as well.
That's right.
That was a cook story.
Good call.
The only that was a little tip of the cap to Under Siege.
That's exactly what it was. It was Under Siege on a smaller boat.
Yeah.
Die Hard on a smaller boat. The only other movie I wrote down that has anything to do with the boat that we didn't talk about was Waterworld. I didn't think that's really a boat, more about the sea than it is about boats, even though a boat sort of plays prominently, but nah. Yeah.
Yeah, if we were to do like movies that take place primarily in the ocean, we could do a whole other.
Hold her up.
I don't know about that, actually. Yeah, I don't know about that.
All Captain Ron, by the way, 24% Rotten Tomatoes.
Fuck that. It's not, you can't do it. You know what? As far as comedies go, do you want your critics telling you what's funny? You know what I mean?
Yeah, comedies seem very divisive.
Yeah, I feel like there should be a whole separate subset of movie critics just for comedies and children films.
I'm
like,
with you.
It shouldn't be the same critics, you know, talking about All Is Lost and Moana, even though that's what we fucking just did here in this episode.
Office Christmas Party.
But we're not critics.
That's right.
How'd you like Office Christmas Party?
Seen.
I can't imagine you not running to the theater to watch that.
I've seen it tonight. Later.
It's a movie made for guys
like
you.
Seeing it after the show.
You realize that.
It's 8 o'clock. I'm seeing it after
you know
the show.
You know that. Like, it's a movie you would
is
watch.
Is it really? Yeah. Well, I should go see it.
It seems like your cup of tea.
So it's good?
Let's see if the show has ended.
Oh, yeah. Let's find out.
All right. Last 2 weeks ago, you guys gambled on Office Christmas Party. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 41%. Anderson bid 40, and so did Brian.
Jesus.
Currently, the 2 weeks after its release, Office Christmas Party has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 44%.
Oh.
Not quite.
So I did a little research, Anderson. We've come
Logan sounds disappointed.
We've come close. We've come close to ending the show before like this.
What Brian is alluding to is if it was 40, we have a little bet that we would end the show abruptly. And
immediately.
No more. Like
cease
almost broadcast. Like on Survivor. We've... The tribe has spoken.
Snuff out the light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would just say the results and then there'd be dead air.
Dead air. No.
Yeah. We'd have to put in the dial tone or like the dead heartbeat just for effect, right?
Something like that, yeah. So record.
I don't know. I kind of like the idea of someone's next podcast playing right after
that's
that.
Pretty good, actually.
What would it be? Oh, whatever.
Whatever the podcast is.
All right.
All right, so Logan's going to sign us a film. We actually tied in the rare instance that we tie. Logan gets the opportunity to sign us a film. He is 100% for bad films so far.
I gave Fat Man Rules the World last time.
I know.
Very good.
This week I got two different
Fat
films.
Kid.
One for each.
Two different.
Because it's getting hard to find a movie you both haven't seen. Anderson, you're going to be watching Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen that?
No.
All right, you're watching that one too then.
What was your movie?
Like a Brian movie.
Bug's Life.
Why would you do this to me, Logan? Why would you do this?
Because you said you hadn't seen it.
Yeah, but it looks fucking gone.
Wasn't it like number
some
brutal,
listeners want me to make you watch
awful.
It, too.
Wasn't it on our list of something recently?
This is the one that I was very angry about.
A listener list. Listener's list, yeah, I think so.
It's something recent.
This is the one that Brian was threatening to make me watch.
No,
the trailer looked so awful to me. You thought?
No, I've not.
So my initial instinct is you may not like this movie.
No, I'm going to hate it.
But it's one of those movies that it might be so off the rails that you actually really like it.
I don't like movies that are so bad they're good. I don't prescribe to that.
Well, see less movies, so I have something to assign you.
Oh, is it top five rotten films? I feel like it was on the listener list of top five rotten films.
I think it might have been.
Really? Well,
but isn't it? It's got to be.
It was from the listeners, and I went on a jag about the trailer coming on in the theater, and I would feel embarrassed to be in the theater while the trailer was actually showing because it was so fucking lame.
It was marketed pretty horribly. I just caught a part of it on one of the movie channels the other day and found some humor in it. So,
are there cliff notes for this movie?
I didn't know they made a sequel.
You could probably sip through it.
Oh my God, it's a movie that he's so passionate about. He doesn't even know that they followed it up.
Hey!
It's a foreign film. I don't hear about every foreign film.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Don't look at the Rotten Tomatoes score.
It's probably like 7 or 8. All right.
Where do I find this
movie? Why am I watching this thing?
Oh, I'm excited.
All right, this week you're going to be gambling on Assassin's Creed.
Oh, no.
Why'd you just say like that? Oh, Ethel.
Will it be the movie to break the losing streak of video game films?
Anderson, you haven't seen this, obviously? When does it come out?
It's Friday.
No, I think my number 2 or 3
maybe
most anticipated.
That's right,
movie.
It was your number. Oh, yeah.
Very excited.
December 21st, so this Friday.
Oscar season, just in time for awards season.
Oh, Passengers comes out this week, too. Passengers, no good, though.
Just in time for award season. Okay, in fantasy football, Anderson, they tell you to don't play a hunch. Play the trends. You know what I mean? Play what history tells you. What the trends are telling you. And I want very much to believe that the narrative. Don't believe narratives. What they say. I want to believe the narrative. This is the film that's going to break the streak of bad.
Is your pick locked in?
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Okay.
I want to believe this is the one that's going to break the streak of the bad.
Yeah. So did I, buddy. That's why I was number three on my top five. But Michael Fassbender, you know, but ever since then, everything I've seen has
really. Well, I haven't seen much about. Oh.
And now I've talked to three people
who
have seen this movie.
So you're
all my fears are being confirmed. And
okay,
it's going to be awful.
Oh, is it okay?
And I might even ban it, even though I know I can't.
I have to
see
the list.
I promise the listeners that anything on my top five most anticipated, I will always track down and see.
It took me 5 years.
You're anticipated.
Number three. Man.
Wow.
It took me 5 years.
Passengers was number one.
Counselor wasn't that bad. Okay, I wrote down 29.
Oof.
We're pretty close, actually.
All right, well, currently, the week before its release with 77 reviews, the Rotten Tomato score for Assassin's Creed is 18%.
Could go either way. It's got to get up to 27 for you to win. Oh, that'd be a dead tie, actually.
Could we kill this bit? I don't like this bit anymore. I'm going to be watching Kung fucking Pow, whatever.
Well, next week, I'll be watching Assassin's Creed.
All right, let's go. I'd do it for Mango.
Thank you to Garth M for the fan art, the listener art this week.
Inspired by a past episode.
Is that supposed to be me?
Yeah, I think so.
That's not funny.
He didn't really.
It's absolutely you. I used to call you Cranium. Remember that?
Anderson's in there, though.
I'm in there.
Yeah. See? Yeah. It's you. Thank you, Garth M. That's very good. Check it out, AndersonandBrian.com, for his fan art. We appreciate it. Thanks for sending in the fan art, everyone. If you want to send it in, go to AndersonandBrian.com. There's a contact link on the show. And you can also go to the Facebook page or Twitter and send it over there. Logan will find it there. If you find us at The Film Vault on both, The Film Vault on all social media. And yeah, thanks to future artists Jesus and the Rabbis, Tyler Scruggs, Inspector Owl, The Maladies of Adam Stokes, VM Tet, and Kickbush. Thanks, fellas and ladies, for being our feature artists this week. If you want to be feature artists, check it out, AndersonandBrian.com. I had a hiccup there, aren't there? Hiccup. And yeah, thanks for clicking through on the Amazon banner. We appreciate the community support. It's pretty awesome. You look dead in the eyes.
I'm just exhausted with the looks like I'm losing again and I have to watch Kung Pao. It's like I have so much shit going on and it's like I'm gonna be sitting and watch. It's hard to explain to the wife. Yes, honey, I'm watching Kung Pao for work. It's really hard to explain that to her. While the fucking child's crying and I have like another movie that I'm supposed to be like I'm doing post production, pre production, perk fulfilling. Four fucking shows and watching Kung Pao while raising a child. It's
maybe you can work Kung Pao into other projects.
I wish I had Google Glass where I could just pop it on.
Send a video of you watching the movie to the people who donated.
That would not be enjoyable for anyone.
Probably not.
All right. We do it for Vancouver.